Tonight on The Download, former Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan, 45th Ward Alderman John Arena, and WGN Radio Bears insider Adam Hogue. And now, here's your host, a man who has already been listed as questionable for the weekend, Justin Kaufman.
Limited. That's the new one. They got rid of probable. There's no more probable in the NFL, so now it's limited and questionable. So, yes, I'm very questionable. Welcome to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. We've got a great show lined up for you. The Secretary of Education, former Secretary of Education, Arnie Duncan, will join us to talk about the first week of school here in Chicago, as well as Common Core and other issues in education. To Arnie Duncan, former CEO of CPS, former Education Secretary, might be the right guy to talk to about school. I don't know. Just a thought. Talk with him. He's actually at the Emerson Collective now, which is a collective. He's opening the Chicago office. It's Lauren Powell Jobs Foundation, the widow of Steve Jobs. So we'll talk with Arnie Duncan about what he thinks about the current state of education. Also talk to him about teachers' contracts, how that all plays out, authorizations, all that. That's coming up. We'll do that in the 8 o'clock hour. Also tonight, Alderman John Arena is going to join us. The water sewer tax. I didn't know they did this. But we were talking about this last night with Mike Fouché, but the idea of the water sewer tax was got through the finance committee, and they did a test vote. I didn't know they could do this, but they kind of like just see what the temperature is before they let the full city council vote on it. And they did that with 32 members of the council, and it was a 26-6 win. But there was a lot of debate, robust argument about what's going to happen come 2023. That's the big magic number, 2023. At that time, the budget office, the mayor's budget office said, yeah, you know what? We're going to have to probably raise taxes again in 2023 or some sort of revenue. So we'll talk with Alderman John Arena about his take on it. He was there today. We'll talk about what he thinks about the concept of a water sewer tax and paying down the municipal employee pension. Also tonight, Adam Hogue, we got to do Bears. A lot of limited guys. Kevin White with a hamstring injury. So we'll talk all about that. I'm excited. I also want to ask Adam how Josh Sitton is fitting in, the Green Bay Packer guard. I'm glad he's with the team. But as a Chicago Bears fan, I wasn't a big fan of those linemen. Never really got into the long-haired big guy up front, kind of, you know, it was Sitton, and on the other side it was Clay Matthews. It's just not my look. Whether or not John Fox is a high and tight kind of guy. Maybe take the locks off for charity or something like that, but you're on the Bears. You're in the big city now. Trade in the truck for a Nissan Altima. Something. But you're now in Chicago, my friend. We'll see how Josh Sitton is working with the Bears. Also tonight, Greg Flamm is back. It's a swap meet. Excited for this. This is where we evaluate your Chicago junk and your Chicago memorabilia. Very excited about that. That's one of my favorite segments of the week now. And I want 312-981-7200. If you got something you want to brag about, I've kind of changed the tone over a while because so many people call in going, I've got a baseball card. How much is it worth? That's cool. I got baseball cards too. But I'd rather have you call in and say, you know what I got? I got this awesome, I think last week the week before the vacation, someone was like, I got a police baton from the 68 riots. Oh, or a hat or something like that. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I want to hear. What do you have that you want to brag about? We give you the option to brag about the memorabilia that you continue to keep everywhere you go. Oh, I can't get rid of that hat. Otis Wilson sweat on this hat. I got to keep it. So we'll do that as well. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier tonight. Esmeralda Leon, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. All right, it's The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Let's get this show started. We'll start with the carryout like we do every night. This, of course, where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The water sewer tax had a test vote today in the Finance Committee at Chicago City Council. It passed easily after a robust argument about the use of the extra revenue. It's slated to pay for municipal workers' pensions. The mayor's budget office released the facts, and the revised payment graph looks a lot like the ramp on American Ninja Warrior. It starts off running and then gets really steep really quick, and then your friends and family are totally disappointed in your failures. But hey, who's worried about a $1 million payment in 40 years, 30 years, 20, 10, 5? Oh, nobody cares. We'll all be governed by robots or all living on a new planet. So keep kicking the can down the road and pass the shrimp cocktail. Play some merengue. Donald Trump's under fire. What? What'd he say? Stop right there if you didn't see this one coming. But last night, he said that when briefed by intelligence officers, Trump could sense through their body language that they didn't agree with the White House policy. Several in the intelligence community have responded saying that wouldn't have happened because they're trained not to wink and nod like 15-year-old girls when given the briefings, and it's irresponsible to politicize intelligence. But Trump and surrogates insist that's what's happened. Was it like this? Here's the intel on ISIS. Obama, this is his real name, and the White House are taking this plan of action. Maybe it was. Maybe that's how intelligence people talk. How do I know? I don't know. I'm not privy to that information. Hillary and her email snagged one nice little nugget. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell's email to Hillary Clinton was released. In this email, he describes in detail how to set up your email to get around the State Department, which is what Clinton was doing. So it essentially shows that this is how business in D.C. is done, and it may be a bit unfair to hold Hillary Clinton to a different standard. When asked to see all of Powell's AOL emails, he conveniently said that he didn't have them anymore, and then he went, ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. Wait, would any of those emails actually say, you know what, Powell, just go to the UN, hold up a couple vials, persuade them we got to go to war. It's oil, baby. It's oil. Also, awesome job. Patriots won again. But let's be honest. It really doesn't matter who did what with what server. It was Hillary Clinton. She could be in the same town as a murder, and we would all ask for her alibi. Just the way it is. Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson made a big gaffe on a morning talk show saying he didn't know what Aleppo was. Aleppo, a city in Syria. Maybe he thought Aleppo was a hair growth product or something you would take for erectile dysfunction. Honey, maybe we should sit in the bathtubs in the yard after you take your Aleppo. Sounds about right. The FCC announced changes to cable regulation. They're considering a plan that would make cable companies offer up apps as opposed to renting cable boxes. So you would just download an app on your TV and be able to use Xfinity. When reached for comment, Xfinity said they would comment between 1 and 5 p.m. tomorrow. That's probably not going to happen either. In weather, less hot. But get this, a week from today, 60s. Savor the humidity, folks. Savor it. In sports, the NFL season kicks off tonight with a Super Bowl rematch between, I don't even remember who was in the Super Bowl. Broncos. Broncos and the Panthers. Former Northwestern Wildcat quarterback Trevor Siemian is new Peyton Manning in Denver. Sure that's going to work out. The Bears open in Houston on Sunday. Redshirt freshman wide receiver Kevin White came up lame with a hamstring injury and was limited today in practice. We'll see how that progresses. The way the NFL injury report works, he'll either be ready for Sunday or out 8 to 12 weeks. Can't really tell. Limited. And you know what's more limited? Who's returning punts? I guess it's going to be Eddie Royal, who's returned 12 punts in the last 4 years. Yeah, you know what? No need for a Devin Hester return. Hester was picked up by the Ravens over the weekend, by the way. Maybe the Bears are just planning on letting other teams score and foregoing punts entirely, like turnovers or touchdowns, arena football style. Maybe put up a net, you know? Maybe? I don't know. The Cubs and Sox are off today. No big deal. The magic number at 9 for the Cubs. The Sox, 430. The Cubs should be expecting a return of Pedro Whitecastle Strope soon, and Justin Grim Reaper is fine after being removed from last night's game. Stomach issues. Maybe he was eating Whitecastle before the game. Possible. And Jerry Reinsdorf will be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame tomorrow. The Hall of Fame sent out his pitcher surrounded by trophies, and the one in the middle is the Sox World Series trophy, which has nothing to do with basketball. But you know what? Trophy's a trophy. Trophy! Reinsdorf has 6 NBA championships to his name. And finally, a Florida man admitted to impersonating Senator Dick Durbin to get himself out of money troubles.
I wonder if that could happen in the Senate with the national debt. Just somebody impersonate Senator Durbin. Anybody. Do it. And lop off a couple trillion. My bet, nobody would notice. That's the carryout for September 8th, 2016. Hey, we got a special tonight. Pumpkin Spice Euros. Get them while they're pumpkin-y.
More to come tonight. Former Secretary of Education Arne Duncan's going to join us. 45th Ward Alderman John Arena is going to join us. Also, coming up after the break, Adam Hoge's going to join us. Talk about the Chicago Bears getting ready for the kickoff to the NFL season. It's a download here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Peyton Manning's on the field. Here comes the Bronco onto the Denver Broncos stadium, whatever they call that stadium there in Denver. But it's hard to watch, Rob. It's hard to watch every year a different team and their fans get a chance to celebrate a Super Bowl victory. And we're making documentaries about 30 years ago.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot more I can add to it than that.
Right?
I mean,
it's amazing.
You know what? Other than the Bulls and their six and now the current Blackhawks, this city has had a real issue with sustaining success.
Well, that's going to change with the Cubs. I think this is I'm not a man who believes in curses, and I watch a lot of sports, and I believe that this team is built to last, not just this year. I think they'll be perennial playoff team. They're just way too young and talented. But the Bears, you know what, we'll talk with Adam after the like that little
Let's get him through the post. Let's get him into the World Series first.
Well,
and then
I'll believe. Everyone's going to be yelling at me when they're playing the Florida Marlins in round one. And they're going to have to go to game five on this one. You're like, oh, man, come on.
Well, and, you know, with the Bears, I know you've got Adam, and I don't want to steal his thunder, but just already, you know, injuries, guys out of shape. I mean, it's a mess already.
Well, we'll get that update from Mr. Hoge after the news.
They're the monsters of the Midwest.
It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, the NFL season is about to kick off in Denver as the Panthers and Broncos get at a rematch of the Super Bowl. But on Sunday, the Chicago Bears head to Houston for a matchup with the Texans. Adam Hoge's been with us the entire season. We're going to talk with him in just a moment about the Chicago Bears season. Some injuries today that made people limited. And I want to talk to Adam as well about how they changed the way the NFL injury report is. So it's now no longer probable and questionable. Now it's questionable. And they use the word limited. They've been throwing it around like hotcakes today. So we'll talk with Adam about that coming up here.
They should just color code it like the terrorist threat level. He's red today, or he's blue.
Yeah, right. You
know, yellow.
I gotta say, and I really want to talk to Adam because you know one of the guys that was on that limited list was Kevin White, and that's scary for a guy who we have had absolutely no luck with in terms of health. I mean, he obviously had a leg issue last year that sidelined him the entire year. It's almost like we need Kevin White to be a second-year player, even though he's never played before.
I'm overstating the obvious here, but if you look at all of the great players in NFL history, the one thing that they all had, along with their skill and talent, of course, was durability.
Yeah.
They were able to stay in the game when they were needed most. And unfortunately, there's some players' bodies that betray them.
Yeah.
And this seems to be one of the cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's young, so let's hope it's nothing. Let's get Adam on the line. He's on the phone now. Adam Hoge, WGN Sports. You can check him out at WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Justin. And it's interesting that you guys are talking about this because just finishing up what my column will be later tonight and early tomorrow on WGNRadio.com, and it starts with J.J. Watt and his career. He's never missed a game.
That's unbelievable.
I provide a little background because I had the pleasure of covering J.J. Watt when he was in college at Wisconsin. So, you know, he kind of had that same sort of mentality when he was in college. But, you know, we had a chance to talk to him yesterday on a conference call, And he had some interesting things to say about this. One of the interesting things he said was, I was a fan once too. I grew up watching these teams, and I know what it's like to be a fan. You want to see your best players out there. You want to see your favorite players out there. And I realize they pay me a lot of money to play this game. So, look, there are certainly guys that have legitimate injuries, but this is what I think John Fox is always talking about between injuries and owies. There's injuries and you just can't play. That's one thing. But if you have owies and you can do whatever you possibly can to get out on the field, those are the guys that I think that you and Rob are just talking about
yeah.
in terms of you know, the special guys that are always able to play through this stuff. And
well,
it's not easy, but it happens.
Let me ask you about that as we get ready for the season. It's Thursday before Sunday. Why don't we just do a classic injury report today? A couple guys limited, including Kevin White. What's the prognosis on all the guys who sat out today who are limited for playing on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out more tomorrow when they actually have to designate all these guys. Now, there's one difference on the designations this year. There's no longer the probable designation. It's only questionable, out, and doubtful. So more guys are going to be listed as questionable than ever before
right.
because the probable designation is now gone. But this is what it looks like for the Bears, and I have a feeling that a lot of these guys are all going to be listed as questionable. To make it as confusing as possible for the Houston Texans to figure out what's going on. But here's the big ones. And let's start with Kevin White, who is not on the injury report yesterday. He popped up on there today with a hamstring injury. What that usually means when you show up on the injury report when you weren't on the day before, usually means it happened today. So he probably suffered a hamstring injury in practice today, which means there's a possibility, if it's serious, that he'll actually he won't practice at all tomorrow, potentially. So we'll learn a lot more about his status for Sunday based on his participation tomorrow. Saw him in the locker room, didn't look all that serious. But, of course, Alshon Jeffrey didn't look all that serious last year either when we saw him in the locker room every day.
Right.
And he missed seven games. The other key ones, Kyle Long, obviously still dealing with that shoulder. He's probably going to play this week. I'm not too worried about that. Bryce Callahan, one of the corners, is dealing with a groin. And Kyle Fuller with that knee, you talked to him yesterday. I would say he's legitimately questionable right now to play. And it might make sense after having that scope just a few weeks ago to actually wait one more week and let that knee get better before.
Who goes in for Fuller if he can't play? I mean, who's the backups? I know Callahan was hurt. Fuller's hurt. You know, I was listening and reading about the Bears secondary really being not almost not NFL ready in the way
that's sort of a good way to put it. I mean, Bryce Callahan's really the backup. So if he's dealing with an injury too, then he, you know, if he can't, he might not be able to play. Also, Callahan's more of the slot corner, and I'm not sure he's best suited to be on the outside anyway. So here's what I'll say. If Kyle Fuller can't play, there's a good chance you're going to see DeAndre Hall, the rookie out of Northern Iowa, the fourth-round draft pick, who had a pretty strong preseason but clearly still going through some growing pains. He's making a huge jump up. Northern Iowa is an FCS-level
yeah.
school, so he didn't even really play true Division I football. And he's jumping all the way up to the NFL, potentially starting week one, depending on what's going on with Kyle Fuller and Bryce Callahan. Now, I really like Hall. I think he has a ton of potential, and I think he'll probably make some plays on the ball if he does get in the game Sunday, which is a distinct
possibility. Let me ask you, you know, just from your experience, I mean, we won't know till game time, and we probably won't know, you know, more about what John Fox and Vic Fangio want to do this season. But with DeAndre Hopkins, who's the wide receiver for Houston Texans and one of the best in the business, do the Bears go with sort of Tracy Porter, where Porter's like, this is my game now. This, you know, like I'm one-on-one, I kind of drag around the field and I cover you? Or is it the kind of thing that they let the scheme cover Hopkins?
Well, it's a great question, Justin. Now, Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator, typically likes to keep corners on each side instead of having, you know, one guy shadow a specific player. Usually just goes left and right with his corners. But that means that if you're the Texans, and let's just say hypothetically it is Tracy Porter and DeAndre Hall, the rookie who's getting the start here, well, you can scheme DeAndre Hopkins to DeAndre Hall's side.
Every time.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? And that gives you an advantage. So Vic Fangio might have to do something that he doesn't really like to do a whole lot, which is actually put Tracy Porter on Hopkins. But let's be honest. I mean, Porter's a pretty solid corner. He's not a shutdown corner in this league. So it really speaks to the mismatch that one of the mismatches the Bears have in this game, and I think there are a few. But that it really puts the pressure on the Bears front seven to get after Brock Osweiler, who's going to be making his first start at quarterback for the Houston Texans, who's still young, not a whole lot of experience. And I think the Bears can rattle him, but they got to get to the quarterback because Hopkins is set up to have a huge day.
Okay, so let me ask you about mismatches, both sides. So you just right there, the idea of the Bears secondary, there's a mismatch for the Texans to take advantage of injuries and what the Bears are offering on opening day. What do the Bears have when it comes to mismatch for the Texans? What are the Bears' strength in this game that they can take advantage of a weakness of the Houston Texans?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Texans' offensive line. So it kind of speaks to what I was just saying. While the Bears' secondary might have a disadvantage in this game, I think their front seven actually has an advantage, and that could allow them to be okay in this football game. But they really have to put the pressure on Houston's offensive line. Now, they added Jeff Allen, which was a big free agent signing, a guard in the offseason that the Bears were actually looking at adding to. But on the rest of the interior of their offensive line, I think the Bears can get after them a little bit. And especially with a rookie, well, he's not definitely not a rookie quarterback, Brock Osweiler, but he kind of still is because of his inexperience.
Right.
And he's going to have a whole lot of added pressure of taking over the Houston Texans' number one job, and he's got that big contract. That's where I think the Bears can really get after the Texans and potentially mask some of the problems they might have in their own secondary.
One of the issues last year, which we saw countless times with the Chicago Bears defense, was with Shea McClellan and others in that linebacking core, just almost like a respond and react problem, where there was, you know, they weren't necessarily a fast defense, especially in those positions. They've upgraded this season. Are we going to see a defense that's more reminiscent of Bears of the past, the Urlachers and the Briggs, where they're running to the ball, they're fast, they're hitting? Is that going to be the style of defensive play for a Vic Fangio Bears defense?
Well, I think that's what the hope is. Now, I don't know that they have the greatest speed from top to bottom on this defense, but what they do have is they have a lot of solid football players who have been in the league for a long time. And I think the key word here is instincts. I think they've added and upgraded the instincts on the defensive front, especially at the inside linebacker position, which I think was the biggest problem last year, which was, hey, Shea McClellan, Christian Jones, not the most instinctual players. Even though they were relatively fast and relatively athletic, they didn't really seem to know where the ball was going to be. And on defense, especially in the NFL where the offenses are so fast, that's everything. I mean, you have to be able to anticipate and understand what is happening before it happens. That's the key on defense in the NFL. So I think with bringing in Danny Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman, you could actually argue they got a little slower there. But the instincts should make up for that and actually make overall the defense faster. And I think that's what the Bears' hope is on defense.
All right, let's shift to the offense. Jay Cutler. We were joking a little bit earlier this week that when it comes to quarterback rankings and just preseason, you know, sort of power rankings, Jay Cutler is as valuable as the rookie class of quarterbacks that are coming in. Yeah, especially when it comes to, like, fantasy drafts and whatever. You're like, do I take the backup for the Rams or do I take Jay Cutler?
Yeah.
I mean, they really are not thinking much for him. Do you see Jay Cutler having success against the Houston Texans? And past that, what is a successful season for Cutler?
Well, I think a successful season to start with is what he did last year. And that's really, you know, managed the game. I hate saying that, but he's best as a game manager at this point. He's not going to be that elite quarterback that everyone thought he was going to be when he was drafted out of Vanderbilt. I think we've seen that. It's been a decade now. But he was really good last year, and actually to the point where I thought he should have been in the Pro Bowl over Tyrod Taylor and Teddy Bridgewater, who both got in. I thought Jay deserved it more. So if he had that kind of season again, and most importantly doesn't turn over the ball, that's a very successful season. And he's going to have more weapons this year with Kevin White and Alshon Jeffery to throw the ball to. Well, theoretically, White dealing with his hamstring. We'll see. In terms of this weekend, though, Justin, this is a tough matchup. I mean, you're going up against arguably, man, at least top three in terms of front sevens.
Yeah, Watt and Clowney, right?
In the NFL, yeah, you got Clowney, who seems to be making some strides. You got J.J. Watt, which we talked about, and everyone knows how good he is. You have Whitney Mercilus, who was drafted right after Shea McClellan in 2012. That's the guy the Bears could have ended up with had they drafted differently. There's a lot of good, solid players on this front seven. And what concerns me, look, I actually like the potential of this Bears offensive line, and I think they got a lot better by adding Josh Sitton from the Packers over the weekend. But we're talking about a left guard in Sitton that has been with his team for 3 days, okay? And a rookie, it sounds like Cody Whitehair, what we're gathering is Cody Whitehair is probably going to start at center. So you got a rookie center to begin with. That's tough to be able to understand the mic points and make the correct calls and be in sync with your quarterback. But it's even harder because he was playing left guard the whole preseason.
Let me ask you, Adam, real quick.
Very limited reps at center.
Okay, let me ask you I real quick just about the guy they picked up from the Rams with the tank tops, Kush.
Yeah.
Who was a big star on Hard Knocks. Is he not is he going to play? Is he a backup? Is that his role? Is he just not in the factoring into any sort of offensive line help?
Yeah, you know, if you watch Hard Knocks, especially the first episode, you would have thought this guy is like a Pro Bowl
center. Yeah, right.
And the reality is he was always in danger of even making the Rams team and eventually was let go.
Yeah.
And the Bears claimed him. So, look, Eric Kush got all those props on Hard Knocks and kind of became a little bit of a star there. The reality is he's a career backup. I think he's a good pickup for the Bears. In fact, when you kind of got deeper into the Hard Knock season and realized Kush might not make it, I was thinking in my own head, hey, he'd be a great pickup for the Bears. But they got him listed right now as a backup guard. Ted Larson's also going to be one of the backup guards, so Kush can back up at center, back up at guard, and that's really going to be his role.
Adam Hoge, wow. Let's get this season started. Adam Hoge, you get to, Intentional Grounding, the podcast is out, a new one tomorrow, a blog with J.J. Watt, the Bears, of course, at the Texans on Sunday. Adam Hoge, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk after the game.
All right, awesome, Justin.
It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up a little bit later this hour, former Secretary of Education Arne Duncan going to join us. Also the former CEO of CPS from 2001 to 2009. We'll talk to him about the first week of school, about teacher contracts, about Common Core, lots to talk about in the world of education. That coming up a little bit later this hour. But first, today, big day at City Council as it's September, so the aldermen are getting back to business. Today, the Finance Committee got to this is so interesting to me. There was a test vote to see if the water sewer tax, which we were talking about yesterday with Mike Fouché, would have enough votes to get through. The committee did a test vote. It was it did pass pretty overwhelmingly, 26-6. But there was a robust argument at the hearing about whether or not this was the right course of action for funding pension funds for the municipal employees of the city of Chicago. It's essentially 29.5% over 4 years. We talked about it last night. And there was a lot of questions about what happens after that 4 years. And that's something that the six aldermen that voted against it had problems with, including Leslie Harrison of the 5th, Patrick Daly Thompson, Willie Cochran, Ricardo Munoz, Scott Wagesback, and my guest tonight, 45th Ward Alderman John Arena. Alderman Arena, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about this. Today, I mean, obviously getting back to business here in September, this was something that really has been pushed by the mayor's office to really plug a hole for pensions and municipal employees. Why did you vote against it?
So I'll start with saying that it's high time that we've focused on our pension obligations and worked on finding ways to meet those obligations in a responsible way. The reason why I voted against it was when we first heard of this idea over a month ago, we asked some probing questions about how they came up with their calculations of what was the needed revenue in order to bring these pension funds up to, you know, get them on track to be 90% funded by, you know, in 40 years. Mm-hmm. And by choosing the mayor's choice of a very regressive water tax, which hits you know, the lowest income folks and the fixed income seniors the hardest, to make sure that if we use that tool, will that tool generate enough revenue to achieve the ends that he's seeking? And only yesterday, a day before we were supposed to vote on this, did we get actuarial reports from that were done by a third party. Only yesterday did we get more information on how they estimated the revenue that would be generated from the water tax. So my problem, an ongoing problem with this administration, is saying, trust us, we know what we're doing.
Right.
And that, lo and behold, that has not worked out for us. We've when I came into office, I ran on a platform of saying we've got to have a city council that asks questions and demands answers before we offer them a yes vote. And this is kind of continuation of that. And we did get – the good news is we're getting more information, but the timeliness of that information is critical. So without my ability within 12 hours to review and digest this information, ask questions, and get follow-up, I won't give them my yes vote until I have more questions answered.
Alderman Arena, you talked to the Sun-Times today, and they talked about, you know, actually – rethinking or having a different approach to this. If you're going to go and you're going to put this kind of burden on the taxpayers to, you know, to fund a pension fund, you know, why not do it where, you know, we get it all out of the way right at the top, as opposed to spreading it out over 4 years and then have to go back to the taxpayers again?
Exactly. One of the things that, and that's kind of a critical point that we're challenged with right now. One of the things that came in this package of actuarial data was that in 2023, when this kind of ramp, they call it, increase in you know, $50 million, you know, increases in contributions to this fund, we're going to come to 2023. And then we get to a point where we go from $570 million contributions per year to $870 million. And they don't have an answer of where that revenue comes from. So this, to the very point you just made, is we are not generating the revenue we need to meet that ramp schedule, and we're going to be coming back in 2023 to say we need new revenue, or or we have to hope for some windfall, and we know that's not coming. So my argument during the committee meeting was, Why are we doing this in 5 years? If we're going to ask taxpayers to contribute this money, and we know that these funds are bleeding 10 to 15% of the amount of the principal that they own, that they have invested every year, the sooner we get money into those funds, the sooner we stop bleeding principal, or, you know, your basic amount of money that you want to be earning interest on. Why not accelerate this? Why not do it in 2 years or 3 years? And it's a calculation of how, you know, what's the burden we're putting on the consumer.
Is that the calculation?
In the immediacy.
Is that the calculation, or is there some political ramifications of the idea of putting that burden on taxpayers when you just put burden on taxpayers with income tax or property tax? But the idea being that it's just not politically, politically, it just doesn't look good for the mayor to put more tax on everybody up front.
Well, I think there's a political component to it. And I look at it this way. If I vote now yes for this tax, I voted for the tax. When it's implemented, you know, and how quickly it happens is less of the calculation in the voter's mind of, do they like the fact that I voted for the tax or not? And I'm somebody in a political position that says, look, I ran and said to my constituents, we need to address these obligations. It's going to be hard. We're going to have to be honest with each other about what it costs to run our government. On one hand, making sure our government is as efficient and as lean as it can be, but two, making sure that it's providing the services we expect, and that costs money. Mm-hmm. And these pension obligations are part of that cost. We've been denying that calculation for years. And I'm being honest with my constituents and saying, look, this is what we need to do in order to do it. How do we do it in ways that doesn't continue to hit the same pocketbooks? You know, my disappointment in this administration is they've never met a regressive tax or fee that they wouldn't want to implement. And they're not looking at how do we go to the corporations, how do we go to the wealthy who are you know, reaping the benefits of the economy right now, as opposed to continuing to go to the lower end of the income spectrum. So without being in a position to dictate that myself, I have to work with what the administration puts in front of me and make sure that that is, you know, as fair and balanced approach as we can get based on the policy he's putting forward.
Alderman John Arena is the alderman in the 45th Ward, which represents the northwest side of Chicago. I mean, I hear you because, you know, looking at this, I mean, I can make so many kick the can down the road jokes here, and we've already done it the first hour of this program. But the concept that not only with the 4-year plan and then magically, you know, we'll just find money when we need to find money, but if you look even further down the loan, the idea of this being a 40-year plan, those payments towards the end of the 40 years are just astronomical. The concept here is very similar to the way that we've governed as human beings, as Americans, at every level of government for years. How do you change it so we don't continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over?
Well, you know, we are building in some accountability into the system when, for example, when in 2012, when the water rates were increased to pay for the infrastructure improvements that we need in the water system. You know, we've got 100 miles of new pipe that have been put in the last 4 years. That we've paid for that from money that we from the increase in the water fees. That was the specific rate that we're paying for 1,000 gallons of water. It's gone from 250 to about 350 per 1,000 gallons. So that money is being invested in the system itself. That's a good use of taxpayer money. What we put into that is over the course of time, that 350 is going to increment with the cost of living adjustments that the federal government puts out.
Okay.
So you would see that ratchet up very, you know, pennies per 1,000 gallons, you know, every couple of years, which means that consumers will be able to budget for this instead of these ramp ups, you know, in a very short, you know, 1 year where we have one rate and the next year we have a higher rate. We're seeing a little bit of increment over time. That's how you make sure that we're building in the cost of living, the cost of doing business as a city into what the consumer, what the constituents are paying, what the taxpayer is seeing in their bill. So that's one way to do it. You know, we are dealing with the sins of the past, and we have to deal with them in the very near term. But we have to build in structures that say, here's how we're going to deal with this going into the future. So, you know, on another tangential subject, which is income, you know, the minimum wage increase that's incrementing through 2019. After 2019, that's going to increment with the cost of living as well.
Okay.
So again, we don't hit these walls and have these battles about trying to bring the income levels for folks at that, you know, the 20% of our workers in Chicago have to fight just to stay with the cost of living. So that's one way that we can do this. And I applaud the administration for building those things into it. But, you know, we've got to be right now, we have to be critical about addressing these massive pension obligations that we have. And every year we put this off, and this is why this 5-year ramp is concerning to me. Every year we don't get that down to zero that we're selling principal is costing us billions of dollars down the road.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been costing ourselves by saying we can put it off, we can wait.
It just seems to be more and more of mortgaging the future. You think you see it with you know, short-term borrowing at the Chicago Public Schools. You see it in this case where 5 years and we'll just have to see what happens. Well, those payments are going to balloon. I mean, it almost feels like the same kind of practices that happened, you know, in the 2000s where, you know, we thought that there'd never be any sort of repercussion to that. So for you, Alderman, you know, being in the position you're in where you're starting to get this information, you know that this is just one of the obligations. There are others, police, fire, all the other pension obligations that you need to deal with. What can be done holistically to take this on, to not just go from one utility to the other and attempt to try and nickel and dime water taxes and this, that, and the other? What can holistically be done to fix the crisis that the city is seeing?
Well, there's more progressive revenue streams that we could look at. One of the ones that we've been exploring is a city income tax. And I spoke to this, I think in the Sun-Times article, they mentioned this. You know, this is something that other cities have done. New York has an income tax like this, a very small 1% income tax with a $50,000 exemption. For the first $50,000 of anybody's income would be exempt from this tax. With a 1% tax would generate $380 million a year. And that is a tax that's as progressive as we can make it in based on the state constitution. We cannot do a progressive income tax like we see in the federal level, and which almost all but 10 states have in this country. So we could do an exemption at the low end of the scale. That would protect the fixed income seniors. That would protect the pensioners. That would protect the low income workers from paying it. But it would start asking the folks that are succeeding in this economy, that have the highest incomes, to help deal with our pension obligations. And going beyond that, our police manpower issues. The mayor has been talking about, you know, just recently talking about increasing our manpower.
Yeah, right.
And where do we come up with that money? Now, you know, we need sustainable revenue sources to deal with those ongoing obligations. And an income tax like that is one way we can do it, and we can do it in a way that would protect the lowest income workers who are most vulnerable to tax increases, because that's a per dollar right. that they earn, that's a dollar that's going out that they're not spending on bread and milk and food for their kids. We need to really be sensitive to how much we're burdening that strata of the income of our city, of our workers, with the policies that this administration has seen most favorable.
Alderman John Arena is the alderman of the 45th Ward up in the northwest side. He voted against in the test vote today the water sewer tax that is being proposed by Mayor Emanuel. The full city council vote will be next week. Alderman Arena, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on, Justin.
All right, coming up, Arnie Duncan's going to join us, the Secretary of Education, former. This last year was his last year in the White House. We'll also talk to him about CPS, of course. This is time as CEO of the Chicago Public Schools. It's coming up after the news at 8:30. Also tonight, coming up, we'll talk with Paul Preston from the Movie Guys podcast out of L.A. I'd love to talk with him because I was a guest on his podcast last week when I was in L.A. How about that, huh? It's interesting. They have a whole setup in Burbank, and we'll talk about it. But a lot of great movie talk, which I realized quickly when I got in there that I was completely overmatched. I was like, I don't know what any of these movies are. They're like, what do you think of Sully? I'm like, okay. And then they're like, what do you think of When the Bow Breaks? It's like, I don't know. The third one was an animated film, Wild Things or Wildlife or something like that.
I was like,
you got the wrong guy, man. You got the wrong guy. I'm like, I'll tell you about water sewer tax pension pickups, but I'm not sure I know much about When the Bow Breaks.
Well, I think the fact that you've appeared on this podcast will now be an addition to your movie resume,
right?
In that you can be a critic.
Dean Richards and Richard Roper will be the new at the movies. Michael Phillips will throw us in, but I got to be in there too.
Yeah.
You know, and I could do this. I saw it. Was it good? every time we see any of the movies that were prepared, you know, for preparation for any of the guests that are coming in, I'll be in the screening and Dean Richards will be there, or Richard Roper will be there, and we'll talk afterwards. I'm like, I defer to them.
Look for a tell.
Yeah, they go, what'd you think? I'm like, is it good or is it bad? This is really not very opinionated when it comes to film. But we'll talk with Paul Preston and, of course, Greg Flamm and the Swap Meet tonight. Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this week, Chicago Public Schools are back in session. My next guest knows a thing or two about the first week of school. It used to be his job to make sure the schools opened on time. Arnie Duncan ran the Chicago Public Schools from 2001 to 2009. In 2009, he took his skills to the White House as a Secretary of Education under President Obama. He served in the cabinet till last year. Duncan's career covers everything from educational policy and the installment of Common Core to selective enrollment, charter schools, and, of course, teacher contracts. Duncan's now back in Chicago setting up the office for the Emerson Collective, a policy advocate founded and run by Lauren Paul Jobs, and he joins me tonight. Secretary Duncan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
I'd just pick your brain a little bit about what it's like to be the CEO of CPS in the first week of school. Does it bring back good memories, bad memories?
It actually brings back great memories, and it's funny. Every year we would go out, we would hand out backpacks, we would, knock on kids' doors and, get them back to school. And I just love doing that. We'd go to different neighborhoods, we'd go back the week after school started if some kids didn't show up and knock on their doors again and get some surprise looks there. But I love this time of year. I love the energy. I've done a couple small things, recently, just at, back to school picnics, helping out a little bit and handing out, backpacks. But I love this time of year, so it brings back great memories. And it's a time of hope. It's a time of optimism. And sometimes these summers are a little bit too long for kids, frankly.
Yeah, right.
Great to have them back in school.
There are issues that are at play here this year for Chicago Public Schools when we think of strikes and authorizations and teachers' contracts, all the kind of stuff. For you, looking back on your tenure, were those kind of things important for you to settle before the school year started? Was it important for you to have a handle on all the business of schools before the school year started?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, we were lucky enough to be able to do that. But I just think, unfortunately, it's like a family. When adults fight, kids lose. And for me, it's so sad to see adults in so much conflict right now and, frankly, so much dysfunction. And our kids here in Chicago just deserve the very best. And lots of kids come from, tough, situations. Lots of kids live below the poverty line. That's not their fault. And families are poor because parents didn't get a great education. And so I just think we need to, as adults, find ways to come together. Not that these issues are easy by any stretch. I know how tough they are. I know how complex they are. But we have to work together to give every child a chance to have a great, great education. And if we do that, then the sky's the limit. And I don't care where they come from. I don't care how much money they have or don't have. I don't care what's going on in the neighborhood. If we give kids access to great teachers and great principals and technology and after-school programs, they're going to do amazing. They're going to do amazing things. I've seen it all my life. But when we don't provide those things, we as adults, we perpetuate poverty. We perpetuate social failure. And that's not something I think anybody wakes up in the morning and wants to do. And so whatever it takes for adults to work together, to compromise, to be on the same page for the sake of our kids, we have to look at what's at stake today.
How do you do that when you have a situation like we do here in Chicago where it's more and more the haves and the have-nots, more inequality when it comes to not only education but just resources in general, and schools and city budgets and state budgets continue to shrink when it comes to money to provide for schooling, for public schooling? Yeah. So how do you accomplish the idea of giving kids a quality education when all those factors are lining up against it?
Well, it's a great question. I don't want to act like there's an easy answer because there isn't. But what I will say is this. What I have long believed is that the real challenge, I don't want to say the enemy, but the real challenge is in Springfield, where there's a tremendous lack of equity in funding. Illinois is one of the most inequitable states in terms of funding. So much of this is done at the local property tax level. So children who happen to be born, 4 or 5 miles north of us along Lake Michigan, Wilmette and Winnetka, children who are born with so much get sometimes 2 to 3 times as much spent on their education each year than children who happen to be born in Chicago. And it is, to your point, fundamentally unfair and fundamentally inequitable. And what I would just desperately love is all of us in Chicago, all of us, to lock arms and demand change in Springfield. Instead, we spend lots of time, or seem to spend lots of time recently, fighting over crumbs here and not trying to grow the pie and go to Springfield together in solidarity. And when people in Springfield see so much dysfunction in Chicago, it gives them an excuse to continue a funding system that is fundamentally broken and I would say is morally bankrupt. And we have to remove those excuses. So again, this fight is not easy. It's not won overnight, but you got to fight the right fights. I think too often here recently in Chicago, people are fighting over crumbs and not seeing the bigger picture.
Well, I mean, one of the issues in the last 20, 25 years has just been the rising debt with the school system, especially here in Chicago when it comes to pension payments, and it continues to balloon. We see that with the teacher's pension payment that needs to be paid out every year in the budget. For you, as someone who has been a part of Chicago Public Schools as the CEO for a decade, how do you reverse that? How do you move past the idea or move forward with that surmounting debt, with that element at play that continues to keep the system down?
Yeah. And again, you just have a funding system that is fundamentally inequitable. Without getting too technical, basically taxpayers here in Chicago pay for pensions of every other teacher in the state, and they pay for Chicago's teachers' pensions. And that doesn't happen in other parts of the state. Mm-hmm. That's not fair. It's fundamentally not right. When I was there, we actually sued the state, sadly, unsuccessfully. We sued the state because of how broken the education funding formula was. But that's the fight. That's the public fight that needs to be fought. And we need to be loud and clear and all on the same page. And if you win that, then it gives you a chance. If you don't win that, if you're not even in that game, then you are, to your point, almost in a zero-sum game where it's impossible to win. And you can fight each other and claw and scratch each other to death, and it still doesn't solve the problem. And just when you have limited, you know, time and energy and political capital and resources, you have to fight the most important fights. And that's not what I see happening today, unfortunately.
Arne Duncan is the former Secretary of Education under President Obama and also the former CEO of Chicago Public Schools here in Chicago. He's talking with us tonight. One of the things, you know, at the national level when we talk about education is Common Core. I mentioned it in the intro. I wanted to get your take now that you're out of office. Where do you think Common Core is at when it comes to, is it meeting its expectations, its goals? And do you think Common Core has a future? Because it's been very controversial, and there's a lot of schools and administrators, even here in Chicago, that have thrown their hands up saying, this is not for us. How do you move something forward with as much controversy around it?
Yeah, and again, I think it's important to really understand the facts and take out the name, take out whatever, the label, take out the political, you know, debate. The question really for me, Justin, is do we need to have high standards for all of our kids? And that standard simply being if they graduate from high school, they don't have to take remedial classes in college.
So that's the idea behind Common Core, is just bringing these standards up. Right.
Very simple idea. And there's lots of talk now about the cost of college, which is too high, and that's a real issue. But the dirty secret here, Justin, is that we spend as taxpayers and as parents, we spend billions of dollars each year for young people who have graduated from high school, who go to college, who aren't prepared, and have to take remedial classes, which means they're paying college tuition to take high school classes again. Mm-hmm. That is a lose-lose-lose proposition. Just saying that young people, again, regardless of where they live, whether it's, you know, inner city urban or, you know, rural or remote or on a Native American reservation, that the young people work hard and play by the rules and get good grades, we should be able to look them in the eye and say, yes, you are prepared to actually go to college and take college-level classes. I don't think that's too controversial.
Well, yeah, I've always heard this, and this is I don't know how much of this is an old wives' tale and how much of this is legitimate and factual, but where does America – you know, where does it rank when it comes to the rest of the world, to China, Europe? I mean,
no,
are we at the
question.
Right? Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. What is it?
No, it's a great question. And the truth is, at every level of the education pipeline, we are not where we need to be. So I'll just walk you through quickly. In terms of access to high quality early childhood education, which I say everywhere is the best investment we can make, we rank like 28th, 29th. It's a dismal record. And other nations just take that responsibility much more seriously to make sure that their young 3- and 4-year-olds are entering kindergarten at 5 ready to be successful. In terms of sort of K-12 math and, you know, math and reading, science results, depending on the grade or the test, we're somewhere usually between 15th and 30th. And then on the higher education side, I think our goal should be to lead the world in college graduates. I don't see any downside there. We did a generation ago. We've flatlined, and about 11 or 12 other countries have passed us by. And again, so at every level, early childhood, K-12, higher ed, I don't think this is a time where we can be resting on our laurels and beating our chests and saying, you know, mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to go back to your original point, I worry tremendously about income inequality. I worry tremendously about young people having access to middle-class jobs and keeping those jobs in the United States. And we live in a global economy. We live in a flat world. And those jobs are going to go to where the best jobs are going to go to where the best educated workforce is. And I desperately want that to be in the United States of America. But other countries are out educating us. They're out investing. They're out innovating. And that's, for me, very, very troubling.
You know, some of the work that you're setting up at Emerson Collective is really centered around violence. That has become a big ticket issue here in Chicago. It has been for years, even when you were here at CEO of CPS. We've had so much about safe passage, about making sure that kids are able to have an environment where they can learn. How do you see violence and education at the intersection? Are they connected in that way?
Well, I'll just say, of all the issues I dealt with when I led the Chicago Public Schools, by far the hardest, and nothing else frankly came close, was just the devastating level of violence that our children faced here in the city. And on average, we buried a child every 2 weeks due to gun violence. The vast majority of these kids were innocent victims. And I can't tell you how difficult it was to go to funeral after funeral, to try to go to homes and comfort families who had lost their son or daughter, to go to classrooms where there was an empty desk and try and make some sense out of what was obviously absolutely senseless. And, you know, my wife and I have two young kids, and I just can't imagine what these other families go through. And I think, in hindsight, very, very naively, I just assumed when I left Chicago to go to D.C. that it couldn't get any worse. And obviously, in fact, it has. So coming home has been bittersweet. On one hand, you know, our family's thrilled to be back in Chicago. On the other hand, it's just a very, very tough time in the city. And so I thought, you know, for me to try and help out a little bit and give back to a city and the people who have given me so much, you know, my entire life, this was the most important issue that I could work on. And we're working on, you know, particularly in the South and West Sides, trying to create, you know, jobs at scale for young people and give them a chance to make some money in the legal economy and gain those skills.
That's the goal.
That's the goal.
Okay.
We funded about 4,700 summer jobs this summer for teens.
And from being on the outside, from you know, your perch at the White House, but then also from CEO, and now coming in the private sector to say, okay, I'm going to help out. Can you see the lasting impact of the educational system on these kids, on these young adults that decide to go into the illegal trade, that decide to go into violence, to be in gangs? Do you see the correlation between how they were treated or how they were let down maybe through the CPS system and how they got to where they're at?
Well, I'll just put it like this, Justin. I'm spending a lot more time, frankly, than I would like to in Cook County Jail and meeting with a number of the young men there and a number of the shooters, quite frankly. And really just trying to understand their world as best I can. And it's an obvious point, but I'll just make it. Of all the young men I'm talking to there, not one has a college degree. So where we educate, where we help young people not just graduate from high school, but, you know, go on to college, the overwhelming majority are going to do very, very positive things. And those young men who didn't have those opportunities, who didn't have those supports, who didn't have a great educational, you know, opportunity or mentors, or access to jobs in the legal economy because they have to, you know, sometimes support themselves from a very early age. I don't even necessarily think they make bad choices. I think they make a choice out of last resort because there are no other choices. There are no other options. And I think what we have to collectively do is create a whole nother set of options, economic opportunity, better education opportunity, in the legal economy. Yeah. And I think the vast majority of these guys will make a rational choice to do the right thing.
Well, we'd love to have you back now that you're here in Chicago to talk more about your work at the Emerson Collective. Arne Duncan, the former Secretary of Education at the White House and, of course, the former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. Secretary Duncan, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks. Have a great day. Take care now.
Yeah, Arne Duncan. Secretary of Education. This would be like his lead-in. Ladies and gentlemen, Arne Duncan. A lot of great texts that came in during that interview. I'm sorry I didn't get to him. But, you know, he's a controversial figure because Common Core, and when we have him back, I don't want to shy away from this because I think we can have him back on. He said he'd come back on, and we should talk about this. One of the reasons people don't like Common Core is not because it changed the way you do multiplication. It's because at the fundamental core of Common Core, it's about teachers teaching to tests. That you're essentially teaching to a test that then a standardized test that you take to make your school better. It's all about numbers, and it's that, and they tied incentives to that. That was a big thing with Arne Duncan back in the day, too. They still do it. Here at CPS, it used to be a lot about, you know, if you do well on the standardized tests, you'll get more money. So then the principals and the teachers are like, well, then that's all we're going to focus on. I don't care about anything else. We care about making sure you fill in the right little bubble with your two number two pencil. So that's one issue. And you and I were talking about this too, Pete. The idea that it felt like Arne Duncan was almost the rise of Karen Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, before Arne Duncan, I don't remember, I could be off on my dates, but I remember Karen Lewis almost coming to Chicago fame in her infamous recorded mockery of Arne Duncan and his lisp.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? That was probably right in the middle of 2000s, and she kind of mocked him and do-do-do-do-do from the stage for whatever, I don't know if it was a teacher's delegate thing or what it was. And that got a ton of attention. You're like, who is this? What is rude? It's rude. And now, you know, Karen Lewis has become a very powerful member of Chicago government. It's just interesting. So I'd love to talk to him about that as well, about his relationship with teachers. We didn't get to it, you know. We only did 15 minutes with him. But those are two things I'd like to get, like, do an hour, like, try to get him in, do an hour about, you know, administration and relationships to teachers, and then also about the myth or fact of teaching to tests. Yeah. But it's pretty cool to have the Secretary of Education on. Former. I didn't get to ask him about playing basketball with Obama. That's another thing that he's famed for.
Oh, yeah.
He always played on those games.
Him and Alexei Janulius would get together for some reason, like on election day.
We should get him on the show, Alexei Janulius. He was when I covered the political conventions in 2008, Janulius was a rock star. He had come in. It was like, you know, those were the days for Chicago politics, for Illinois politics. This was before Blagojevich went down, so he was the governor and everyone hated him. Daley was still the mayor. Emanuel was running. He was already flip-flopped from Clinton to Obama. You know what I mean? Obama, obviously, the president of the United States running for U.S. Senator. I mean, Durbin, Lisa Madigan. There was just this Alexei Janulius, because Alexei Janulius was he the treasurer?
Yeah.
And he had a big speech at the DNC that year, in 2008. And I remember that. And then he ran for Senate against Kirk and lost and kind of got out of the biz. I'd love to see what he's up to, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. And what I was thinking about with Arne Duncan was, what's Ron Huberman doing? Remember Ron Huberman?
What's a Ron Huberman doing these days?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember Ron Huberman. I can go even deeper. Jean-Claude Brizard.
Oh, yeah. Remember him? I do.
He's an education guy. Before Barbara Bird Bennett, right?
I'd like to get all these guys.
This is like, yeah. It's like, you know.
If you're listening right now, please contact WGN 312-981-7200. Leave a message.
We should do a fan. You know, we were talking about the idea of doing fantasy draft as a segment. The concept being that we apply the concept of drafting, fantasy draft, like you get together and you say, I'll take number first round, second round, to anything, fruit, to TV shows. We did it for Saturday Night Live. We should do it for administrators. We should do it for Chicago, for city wonk administrators. Be like, first round.
But Barbara Bird Bennett's really dipped my draft board.
She's really, she's
gone down.
Since she was indicted, it's really tough to, you know, do you want to take her? You don't know if she's going to be around.
It'd be tough.
That's a really funny bit. We could do that for a good half hour. Just saying, people call in with, like, and it just becomes random. I'd take Jane Byrne, living or dead, right? It's just like a history kind of thing.
All right, well, if we're doing it, then I get Gary McCarthy.
You get McCarthy. Oh. Okay, so you see, there we go. Well, who would you go with your first pick?
I'm going to steal one from you, Justin.
Uh-oh.
Legendary Alderman Bert Nateris.
Oh! He's a five-tool player. He can do a lot of things. Don't know if he can do them well, but he can do a lot of things. when I first started here, all right, I'll tell my Bert and Tara story later. We'll tell it after the 9 o'clock hour. Stay with me. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. I love that idea. Fantasy draft, Illinois lawmakers. Past and present. We should do that coming up after 9:30. Pete already gave you his first round pick would be Bert Nateris. Okay. And this would be like if you were creating your own administration. And it, like I said, it could be past and present, dead or alive. The idea being, who would be your rock stars, Democrat or Republican? You don't have to follow. Just who would you want if you were in charge of picking an administration of politicians and leaders and lawmakers? Who would be your fantasy?
All right, these are new
fantasy
rules.
Team. Well, I'm making it up as I go.
Okay,
but I do like the game. My number one pick would be Senator Paul Simon.
Good one.
Yeah.
Wonderful senator from the state of Illinois. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd want to do Little League rules. So Sheila Simon comes with, you know.
You have to draft her. No, you have to draft her in the second round.
You do?
That's how it works.
Oh, really? I thought you just got him.
No, like I seem to recall like.
Oh, then I don't want her. I can't have her in the second round. She's more of a you fill out the roster towards the end, you know. But she does play the banjo. I do that. I know that. So, yeah, so we got Nateris as a first round pick. Martyr?
I don't know if I would pick him first now that I know.
Oh, you're taking him off the list?
No, I still want him because I was thinking, like, I'm going to do mine based on who provides the best sound bites.
Oh, yeah. Because that's what you want. You want colorful commentary. I mean, that could be that, you know, your style of administration. You want colorful sound bites.
Can't wait.
All right. We'll do that after 9:30. So think about that, Martyr. Think about that, Pete. Think about that at home. 312-981-7200. I was actually having this conversation. I was in L.A. We were talking about, you know, a lot of the L.A. sort of the expats from Chicago. We're talking about they kept asking me questions like, what's happening in Chicago? What's going on with Mayor Emanuel? And I'm just like, oh, let me tell you. Okay, give me another beer. Someone give me a beer. There was talk and, you know, everyone was like, well, when is he up for re-election? And I'm like, it's not till 2019. And there was just a lot of talk of, man, they're like, man, I forgot about who's even in Chicago anymore. And it was, I mean, that was fun. It was fun to be sort of the Chicago guy, you know, and see all your Chicago friends. That was one thing that we had this, and I mentioned earlier in the week, I was in LA last week and we had this Airbnb and we just invited people over and that was part of it. Like, at one point, I stopped even referencing it as an Airbnb. I'm like, welcome to my home. this is where I live for 2 days when I go to L.A. But we had a great time. I had an amazing time. I keep thinking about it as the week goes on. I'm like, I wish I really liked it. Sans the issues with parking at the Hollywood Bowl and traffic in general. I love the rental car, too. And one thing we did, which was great, was we got a chance to go on a podcast. Schadenfreude. So the sketch group that I'm in reunited in L.A., which was great. Hadn't seen each other in a while. Kate lives in L.A. Adam lives in L.A. Kate now lives in New Jersey. Sandy's in Toronto. Steve's here in Chicago. So we all got together. And it was great because we were able to hang out, but we also got a chance to do the Movie Guys podcast, which was a nice invitation from Paul Preston. It's a great podcast they do that is pretty much given the business to the business, given the business to the industry. So they review, preview, do news about movies. It's all about movies, which, you know, is great because Adam Witt is part of it and he's a huge movie guy. Sandy's a huge movie guy. Steve's a huge movie guy. Me, I'm not a movie guy. Like, that's like one of my area. And, you know, so they ask questions about it and I'd be like, I don't even know. What's Sully? Is that what it's called? Called Sully? Tom Hanks? Is that the big Tom Hanks with the white mustache? Oh, that's a current events movie? That's not on Lifetime? That's how it felt. Paul Preston joins me now. He's the man behind the Movie Guys. That episode's coming out soon. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Justin, how are you?
I'm good. So,
can I vote real quick? Yeah. Daniel Patrick Moynihan. All right, there's my pick.
Got it in. That's the first rounder.
Yeah.
Good, good.
Also, really strange as an expat to be on hold and hear the Chicago news with all this Cubs winning. It's great.
It's
right?
You know, it's
even
so great.
I just think it's the greatest thing now to hear the hometown talking about how they're winning.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We were just talking about I believe that this is just the standard now. Last year they won, this year they're winning again. Get used to the new normal here in Chicago. What's up, what's down, that kind of thing.
That's great. Well done, Theo Epstein.
There you go. All right, so Paul, tell me about the movie, guys, because I was really impressed with your setup. I mean, you guys do the podcast you've got a studio set up in your house. It was really cool. But tell me about the genesis of this podcast and also how you prepare for it, because I also was impressed with the preparation.
Well, I did go full Marc Maron. Yeah, and I built the studio in my garage. We used to bounce around from a studio and or live stage performance, and eventually stopped paying other people to house us. And we said, you know, we spend all this money once, we build a studio in my garage. So we're in a garage in the valley, so it's full-on grassroots comedy coming at you every week with the show. However, we do pride ourselves in actually having really good production. So, you know, we brought in the mixer and the mics and the whole thing to get the whole show to sound better than just, you know, a bunch of people standing around one mic in an echoey room hoping somebody says something interesting. The one other thing I pride ourselves on, you talk about the preparation. Well, thank you for that. We do look into every movie that's coming out, and each show previews that upcoming weekend's film. So you mentioned Sully. We also talked this week about When the Bow Breaks and a little-known animated film, but it's out there, called The Wildlife. So we watch the trailers, and we just write late-night monologue-type jokes about them. Anything that doesn't make a quick one-liner that we burn through, we save for conversation, and we kick it around in a roundtable setting.
How many people are officially a part of the movie, guys? Because you had Karen, Bart, Adam, and yourself. Are there other writers as well? I mean, how many people are throwing the one-liners in for jokes for the movies?
That's it. We write and host the show, except for Steve Schultz out there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. I know Steve.
Sending me jokes every week. So he writes and contributes every week as well.
Well, I mean, that was what was impressive, was it was scripted. You guys were able to put these jokes together in advance. I mean, it wasn't something like, you know, with podcasts today, it's all about, well, we'll just get in a room, we'll just talk about it. This was a little bit more, and I didn't know this before, but so you do it so well because I've heard the episodes before, but you guys have done a good job of preparing to put that forward.
Thanks. And yeah, we even talked about this when you were on the show. This week's show with you, Sandy and Steve, will post. It's posted right now. It was posted before I appeared here with you. So you can go listen to it. Towards the end of it, we did have a nice roundtable about the creative comedy ventures people think they can just kind of get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think I'm funny and I'm going to do stand-up. You know, it's not all that easy. And so we like to we make an effort, at least, to separate ourselves from the pack by providing the written stuff, real content, original stuff you're not going to find anywhere else outside of just the talk. And all that information and material and having a guest kind of keeps the show segmented and regimented too. So you get from one thing to the next without sitting around going, what'd you do this week? And you go,
right.
Yeah. So we like to keep the pace and the content coming at you fast and funny. And you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it. We loved having you.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, how many movies do you usually do per episode? We did three movies, but I mean, is that usually the case, even when you get into the sort of summer blockbusters where there's a lot coming out in 1 week?
Actually, fewer come out in the summer because a lot of movies will stay clear of, like, Captain America Civil War, which you talked about last time I was on your show.
Right.
Nothing opened that weekend. They knew that was going to be so huge, you just step aside. There might have been some small counter-programming, but, it's actually now, September and January, like just after award season, just after summer, when it's like the dumping ground for whatever. So you'll get more movies per weekend. We do try and cover just the major releases, but if we see any of the indies, like I saw Hell or High Water recently, absolutely worth talking about on the show. We didn't preview it because it won't play everywhere, but definitely want to talk about those movies when they come out as well, once we've seen them.
Yeah, I'm interested in that concept. I mean, for you pay attention to the way the movies work, but when are we going to start seeing movies that are going to be award season ready? Is that start now? Is September? Is it a little later in this season?
I think so, but studios do love to backload or endload, whatever the word would be, the year, so it's fresh in voters' minds when they vote in January. So you'll see really in December the big ones come up. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you'll have movies come out, like Sully's going to be a contender. Tom Hanks, at least, is probably going to be in the mix for Best Actor from the word going around from where it's played
from all the
now,
from all the big
some of the festivals
from all the billboards that are in Hollywood right now that just say Tom Hanks Best Actor. And you're like, okay, it hasn't really started yet, but that's great. I'm glad that you suggest that.
Yeah, right. Somebody said it somewhere in a review. Put it up there.
Right. Put it up there.
Yeah, but that's a big coming together of two. You know, that's Eastwood and Tom Hanks. Those are two Hollywood icons. So you know, yeah, they're right, I guess, to make a big fuss of it. Now, from what I've heard, again, the movie lives up. From, you know, I can't wait to see it myself here over the next couple of days.
Are you an Eastwood guy? We talk about that in the podcast. I was amazed at how much I wasn't an Eastwood
guy. Yeah, we rattled off titles.
Never seen any of those movies.
It's not even like you didn't like them. You never saw them.
No, none of them. No, I don't think I've ever seen
Unforgiven.
I've never seen Unforgiven. And Clint Eastwood and I just
really
do not click. I don't know what it is. Like I see, I don't have any bias against Clint Eastwood and, you know, or anything that he stands for, anything like that. I mean, I just think that the movies that Clint Eastwood has directed are just, I'm always like, meh, not interested. Meh. Unforgiven's a Western. Is that a country Western?
It's just a Western. Oh, the country doesn't enter into it. He plays banjos and shoots guys. He is a little cold for some people. His movies are, Sandy brought this up on the show as well, his movies are a little long here and there. That's why to hear Sully's only 96 minutes is a little bit of a blessing. They can crank that story out. You know, there doesn't need to be much more to tell than that. Yeah, you land everybody safely. They investigate him. We see what toll takes on him. Credits. But your favorite movies you mentioned on the show are Lebowski and
Rushmore.
Rushmore. Not exactly emotional movies either. So I thought maybe you'd jive with Eastwood.
I don't know. You know, that's how you end the episodes, is you ask the guests what their favorite movies were. And I was having a hard time because I'm like, well, you know, that's tough. But I have to say that, you know, Rushmore struck a chord. It was, I guess it's the only movies that I actually buy. Brain Candy would be the third I was thinking about from Kids in the Hall. That's a great movie.
Cisco. Yeah, that is the best.
Exactly. Well, the new episode is out. Paul, I can't thank you enough for having me on it. I appreciate it. Schadenfreude appreciates it. And where can you find the new episode?
Everything goes to themovieguys.net. Of course, we've just uploaded to Podbean. That's our host for the podcast, themovieguys.podbean.com. And then iTunes, at their whim, looks for new material and puts it up on iTunes. So that's probably going to be tomorrow.
All right.
So usually every Thursday and Friday it gets out there.
All right. Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for joining us. Paul Preston from The Movie Guys. You can find him at movieguys.net. Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure.
It's a download coming up at 10 o'clock. Greg Flam's here for the swap meet. This is where we brag about all the Chicago memorabilia and junk that we own. Every week, Pete, I go, you know what? I'm going to dig deep through my garage. And every week I totally forget. I blame it on myself. I'm hard on myself on this one because I should know better. I feel like I had collected a bunch of stuff when I was at a different place, and I then wrapped it up when I left to come here to WGN, and that was a lot of Chicago sort of tchotchkes and things, and then they're just sitting in the garage, like still masking taped up.
Oh.
So I have to like cut through there and be like, oh wow, this is a nice lanyard.
Sounds like a good project for a Sunday, you know, third game in for, you know, the Bears are 0-3 and you've thrown in the towel.
When I forgot, yeah, I'm like, that's it. That would be great. That's a good idea. Horseback riding on one Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Apple picking. I'm how do you say this? What I had to do with my mom would make me go and take recycling, like newspapers. This was like the 80s, and like put it on a truck. Like it was like a volunteer organization, like in Woodstock, Illinois, where we would take bundles of newspapers and then like put them on the truck.
Oof.
I don't know what that was actually
where it
for.
Went.
Yeah. It was in the Alco parking lot. That's all I remember. Which they then turned into a venture, I think. Who doesn't love the Alco parking lot? By day, we would do volunteer work. At night, we'd take our cool cars and open up the hood. Take a look at what I got over here. That was a Zare parking lot in McHenry. The gearheads would roll up and be like, "You want to see my engine?" "No, I want you to see my engine." They would do that bit, and you're like, "All right, okay, good. I'm gonna go cruise the Burger King parking lot. Okay, you have your fun with your cars. I'm gonna keep going around and around this Burger King parking lot until something happens." It's a download here on 720 WGN Chicago. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 10, Greg Flamm will be here, of course, like he is every Thursday night. Wow, what a game. And as Rob mentioned, Trevor Siemian getting bounced around. It's hard to say that the Northwestern grad it's necessarily his fault because they're playing the Carolina Panthers defense. And even though they may not have Josh Norman or Charles Tillman anymore, their linebackers are just so good. Is it Thomas Davis Sr., the guy who number 58 who played the Super Bowl with a broken arm? always a test of, you know, when you see these, hey, let me tweak to hammy. Thomas Davis Jr. or Sr., number 58 on the Panthers in the NFC Championship game, broke his arm. Broke it. Like he broke a forearm or something. It wasn't like a fracture. He broke it. And he's still suited up, and they just put it in a mobile cast. They're like, it can't get any worse. And he played outside linebacker in the Super Bowl. Like, making tackles one-armed. That's pretty crazy. And, yeah, in the last play right before the break, Cam Newton got hit by – he's back. Cam Newton's back in. But DeMarcus Ware hit him low, and Von Miller went helmet to helmet. And you could just see, like, that sort of – that violent, you know, sort of – football thing that we missed for so long for a year is back. It kind of makes you go, oh yeah, just like we were talking about last night. All right, tonight we thought we'd do, since we got a little bit of time till Greg comes in, we thought we would bring back Fantasy Draft. We did Fantasy Draft SNL, the idea that you could have anybody working today. We tried to make it present tense. We tried to make it anyone who's working comedically today. If you could put them on the SNL cast, who would you go with? First round, second round, third round, just like a fantasy football draft. That was a lot of fun. We did that like 2-3 weeks ago. Sandy Marshall was in studio. That was tons of fun. People called in. So we've been toying with the idea of creating a fantasy draft segment that we would do weekly. We could do fantasy draft food, fruit. I was thinking that would be a good one for tonight. Fruit. What would be your number one draft pick if you were doing the fantasy draft fruit, Pete?
I'm going to go with a peach.
You'd go peach?
Had one just this afternoon. Delicious. Yeah.
That we'll save that one for later. Tonight we thought we'd have some fun just for a little bit, little time, like I said, till Greg gets here, with Illinois politicians, lawmakers, who were talking a little bit earlier about the concept of, you know, who can turn this town around, who can turn the state around, and who, you know, past, present, dead or alive, would you want to, who do you consider to be one of your favorite politicians? That's what we'll do. So first round, we let Rob Martyr go first. And he said his number one pick would be Gary McCarthy, the displaced, fired former police chief. Just got fired in 2016, just now. Was it November? It might have been 15, right?
Was it around Christmas time,
yeah,
maybe last
Christmas,
year?
Before Christmas, yeah. Gary McCarthy. We'll get his reasons for McCarthy, who comes on Rokan all the time as well.
He does.
All right, so Pete, yours, who would you have as your... number one pick.
Pick former alderman Bert Nateris. Burton Nateris.
Why Nateris?
Just because I like his ebullience. Is that a word?
Sure.
You know, he's always a fun sound bite.
Nateris was the alderman of the 42nd Ward, who Brendan Riley took over for, who Bert Nataris was the guy who would get up there and be like, we've got to put diapers on the horses.
Talking about a sandwich man.
Exactly. These dogs, they're ruining dining outside. That was his thing. He was really into it. He'd always be the guy behind some of the more outlandish material. Bert Nataris and I actually became friends. Friends is a loose word. But Bert, after
collaborators.
Retired, collaborators, where we did an actual, we did a lot of stage shows together. I know that's hard to believe, but Bert Nataris and Schadenfreude did a lot of shows together making fun of Chicago politics a couple years back. And I asked Bert to come on the show when I came over here to WGN. I asked Bert, I called him, I said, Bert, Justin. He's like, oh, you. I said, Bert, do you want to? I want you to come on. I want you to be one of my first guests. He goes, just leave me alone. He said, I was like, really? I haven't talked to you in like 6 months. Just leave me. Stop calling. Like, oh, geez, okay. So, yeah, we haven't talked. I actually ran into him. This is a great story. We were over at Boss, the bar. It was one night around Christmas about a year and a half ago. And I went in there for a drink, and he was in there. And it's like, hey, and he's like, oh, the same. He's got the same bit every day. Oh, you again. Anyway, he's there, and it was a crowded bar, and he had one table, and I sat next to him, and there were like three other seats, and these two young ladies sat down, right? College age, maybe 21, 22 years old. And Bert starts to ask him questions, and he's sitting there, and I'm like, and they were like maybe from the Iowa, 21, 22 years old, something like that. And I'm like, do you know who this is? This is the former floor leader of city council. And they're like, what city council? And I'm like, the city council, like, this is an alderman. What's an alderman? He's funny looking. And I just watched Bert, like, just, you know, puff out the chest a little bit. And his line in, right? This is his line. I once had tea with Margaret Thatcher.
That's what? What?
I was like, wow, hey, ladies, did you hear that? What do you think of that? And they're like, who's my good dancer? Oh, and I was like, oh, it's so good. And then I was just, you know, like the next line is he goes, I toured the chambers at Nuremberg. I'm like, okay.
Ease
all
up
right,
now.
Bert, ease up. I think you're going in the wrong direction. You got to know the room. You got to know the room.
Yeah.
Bert,
so. You talk about Drake? That might have won them over.
Tell us your Drake stories, Nataris. Mine would be, are you ready for this? I'm going to pick, my number one pick would be Senator Paul Simon. What do you think of that? Huh? Paul Simon? Nobody likes that? I think Paul Simon was a great senator. He had the bow ties. He's a great senator from the state of Illinois, Democrat. I think he would be great. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's try Dan. Dan, who would you go with? Who'd be your number one pick if you were picking a Illinois lawmakers?
My number one draft pick would have to be Fast Eddie Vrdoljak.
Why Eddie Vrdoljak?
He was a sound bad little meister. He could throw a little zinger in there and have you believe it. He could sell swampland to a Floridian.
There you go. I like that. Thanks, Dan. That's a good one. Fast Eddie Vrdoljak. There you go. Did you hear that, Pete? Fast Eddie Vrdoljak. Strong. All right. Let's keep going here. Actually, here's one from Maggie. She says Maria Pappas, the current, she's not treasurer. She's, she's Cook County treasurer? No. How, what, recorder of deeds? And we'll figure it out. But I know she's one of which. She's great. And her other, and I'll let her go second, Judy Barr Topinka.
Oh, yeah.
Strong.
Miss her.
Mm-hmm. So Judy Barr Topinka is off the board. You got a second pick?
Maria Pappas, treasurer.
Treasurer, yeah. All right, Pete, what do you think? What are you going to want to go to?
I'm going to go big this one.
Okay.
Harold Washington.
Darn it. That was my one pick. Could you imagine? So now you've got Bert Nataris and Harold Washington in the same cabinet. Now you're the president. You're the president of Illinois. These are just guys that would help you, guys and gals that would help you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My second pick, here's who I'm going to pick. I'm going to go cross. I'm going to go cross party lines. I'm going to pick a Republican, Governor Jim Edgar. Yep. You need someone who's been in the state house. You need someone who knows how to maneuver around and be able to get things done. A very successful Republican governor. I will take Jim Edgar. I'm showing my glory days. I like the 80s, I guess. He was more 90s, but Jim Edgar will be my number one pick. All right.
You actually kind of stole my, not really, but because I was going to do the same thing, going across the aisle, Governor Jim. But I was thinking Big Jim Thompson. Big Jim Thompson.
So you're going to go Thompson?
Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in. Okay, this is a fun game. All right, I will pick third. I got one. I will pick... I'm going to pick former Cook County Board President John Stroger.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Right? Put a little Stroger. You need someone who's got some juice, knows how to make things happen at the county level. So now I've got someone who was a governor, got someone who was a Cook County Board President, and got someone who was a senator. Wow. You're going to have a hard time beating that, Pete.
That's Stroger. That's a good pick.
Yeah.
What's a little Stroger? What was little Stroger?
He comes with. It's a family
yeah, that's
deal.
Right, family thing.
John's his, it was Todd Stroger.
Oh, yeah, Todd. Yeah.
Little Todd.
Yeah, I love that guy.
When I'll tell one time I was pitching a screenplay in Hollywood. I was in the meeting at Endeavor, at Ari Emanuel's play. There are agents everywhere, five agents. Glass, you know, like just beautiful, got the Evian water, and they're asking about the and then we got off on a tangent, and it was right when Todd Stroger won the primary over Forrest Claypool because he replaced his dad. His dad was in a coma, and John Stroger, remember John Stroger was in a coma and he beat whoever in the primary.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I scrapped whenever I was pitching. I'm like, you know, it's a great story we should do. It's a story of no, John Stroger's what? In a coma. And he just and they're like, we don't care. And I'm like, I care. That's a great story. The guy in the coma won. He won a primary. He's the Chicago politics. And they're like, yeah, no. So if someone else likes it, maybe we'll like it. Essentially,
oh, that's amazing.
How it works in Hollywood. All right. 773 said, Jim Edgar, great choice. What, Stroger? Good night. I'm not talking Todd Stroger. I'm talking his dad, John. 815 says, if we're going past politicians, my pick would be Alexander Haig.
Haig.
Haig was a, wasn't Alexander Haig a, wasn't he a secretary, I want to say like a secretary of state under Reagan?
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Yeah, you can go national if I guess you want to go national. I like the local. Local's more fun. All right, Maggie's got another one. Her third pick, Dorothy Tillman.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good lineup here.
She's around. She's still around. I think I like tried to like get her for the show.
Oh, my God. If you could get her for the show.
Because she does.
I'll do a big
she's
table
around.
With her. We'll try on hats. We'll do
yes.
all the things. Yes. Love it. All right, you got a fourth pick? Can you go four deep on Illinois lawmakers? This is where it gets hard, you guys. It's easy at the top. It's easy to be like, oh, yeah, Paul Simon, Jim Edgar, Big Jim Thompson. Oh, now you got to get deeper.
I'm going to go, well, again, this is not anything related to politics in general, but it's just because I just always enjoyed whether where he was in Congress or City Hall, William Beavers. Remember him? I think he was an alderman, and I think he was
said,
also...
Beavers said... The
something about
the big balls.
Yeah.
What was the thing? Or the hog with the big balls or something like that? 847's pick was Ray LaHood. That's a good one. Ray LaHood became the transportation secretary.
Yeah. Now his kids.
His kid's a congressman.
Congressman, right? Yep.
All right. Let me think here. 630 says Dorothy Tillman didn't help anybody in her precinct but took all the money she could from anyone who's passing out money. She should have gone to jail. All right. You know what? She's on my team. She's on Maggie's team. That's the thing. I mean, it's so funny that every politician that we mention, someone texts in like, that person should go to jail.
I I know, because, I mean, you know, like George Ryan or Rod Blagojevich or Mel Reynolds.
Oh, Mel Reynolds. Carol Moseley Braun.
Carol Moseley Braun.
She would be, if you get two good starting wide receivers and you're looking for a third just to see maybe a swing, Carol Moseley Braun's on there. It didn't turn out well for her, but when I'm talking 1992, Carol Moseley Braun, you know?
She was huge.
All right, my pick?
Yeah.
I will pick, this is tough. Let's see. I'll go with just for longevity, I'll go with Alderman Ed Burke. Put him on my team. He was there for Harold Washington. He was on the other side. He's the block 29. Former police officer.
Mm-hmm. So
knows a ton about Irish history. Wrote a book about political conventions. You can do a lot with him.
He gets his block plowed usually first during the winter.
I would have Alderman Burke be the guy who does all the announcements at the beginning. He'd be like he does in city council. Like he'd be the one that tells everyone, all right, guys, no parking. No parking on Cullum tonight. If anyone parked their car on Cullum, you can't park there. 847 says their pick would be Roland Burris.
Oh, that's a good one.
815 says go big or go home. My number one choice, Richard J. Daley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one.
From the Daleys.
That's a good one. And you know what? That's a tough one because you're like, there's so much retrospect because it's been 50 years or whatever. And you're like, you know, and there's a lot of racism and things involved. But if you're really going for a big dog politician.
Yeah. I mean, you don't get much bigger than Michael Belandic, maybe, as far as mayors. I would like to go with Alderman Pat LaVar.
Really? Ooh.
Is he still in office?
I don't think he is, but that's a.
And I remember.
It's like picking a kicker in the third round.
I remember. he means a lot to me because I remember I was working for another radio station and we played softball. We had a softball team and we'd play various radio stations, other entities, and we played Chicago City Council. We played the team.
Yeah.
And during that game, I was playing third base, and there was a foul ball, and myself and the catcher collided, and I broke the catcher's leg.
Oh, no.
In a recreational softball game.
Oh, that's the worst.
And he was like the husband of one of my coworkers who was like an electrician. So he was out of work for like 6 months. So, and then I hurt my rib, so we all were taken to the hospital during this game, and he invited us to the council chamber. Pat LaVar invited us to the council chambers like a couple of weeks later and like presented me with like a red little fire truck and everything and like did a whole proclamation on the council floor.
Hear ye. This is for Pete Zimmerman for his ribs and his friend who broke his leg. Wow. There you go. It's the little things in life.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll wrap up here, but a lot of people, 630-847-312, all picked. This is surprising. Jesse White. Jesse White, as one person said, 708, said, when's the last time you renewed your driver's license today? It's not a nightmare, thanks to Jesse White. There you go. Also, some picks for Barack Obama and Abe Lincoln.
Oh,
obvious.
Yeah.
Obvious.
Jeez, yeah.
Paul Powell, Secretary of State. So a lot of great stuff. All right. Maybe we'll do this a little bit more organized. I mean, this was just sort of like brainstorming. But I think that there's a lot of people who would want to play. If we could, like, do categories, you know, like you had to have six people. I don't know. We figured it out. We should have, like, a
fantasy
football.
Yeah, like you have, you know, you have your, you go office. You can have your senator or your, you have a senator, you have a congressman.
Right.
You have a, as you picked, a Cook County person. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love it. All right. Fantasy draft, Illinois lawmakers. All right. Welcome back to Download. 10 o'clock here on Thursdays. You know what that means. It's time for Swap Meets. We all own something that connects us to this great city. Whether it's memorabilia or a souvenir, we go out of our way to keep it from the trash bin. When we move, we take good care to preserve it. It's not junk. It's Chicago history. What do you have tonight? It's time for the swap meet. It's like Chicago's Antique Roadshow. You call in and impress us with what you got, and we'll tell you if it's worth anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's a chance for you to brag about the things you've collected over the years. You can text, you can call. My guest tonight in studio, Greg Flamm. He goes by the name DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, Greg. How are you, buddy? How you
doing? Justin. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Good to see you, man.
Always fun. Thank you.
I know. This is so fun. It's one of my favorite hours of the week. It's good to have you here.
It's great.
One of the great things is you always bring in interesting things you find from estate sales throughout. You had an extra week to comb.
Right. I try it. I mean... It's sometimes it's a challenge, sometimes it's easy. It depends what's at the sales. But
you and I talked at the last episode that it's going to get tougher now because school's back, and that means that you're going to have more estate sales or garage sales that are going to be less and less.
A little less,
summer
winds
out.
Less opportunity, yeah. But that's all right. You know, you kind of stock up in the summer and see how it goes from there. But there's always estate sales, so it's just a matter of, you know, finding that right one where it's borderline hoarder sale.
That's what you're looking for.
Right. You know, because you could pack a box for $10, you know.
Do estate sales, do they push that? If they know they got a hoarder thing on their hands, or they know they got a lot of juicy stuff, they're like, hey, guys, hoarder lived here.
Yeah, they do. Sometimes they'll put the word hoarder in their sale. They'll just say it's a dig. They'll put, you know, coded word dig.
And what does that mean? That just means
it just means you're going to have to dig through a lot of stuff to find your treasure. And but what's great is, you know, the first day of any sale, they're really not bartering or, you know, bickering over it. But that last day, they'll be like, fill a box for $5, fill a bag for $5. And whatever's left, you know, if you're willing to dig through the stuff, you find some stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, so.
All right, Greg, what did you bring this week?
All right, kept it simple. Obviously, with football starting, I brought the VCR quarterback game.
it's a board game.
Right, it's a board game, and you know, you put the tape in, and then you know, whatever, roll dice or something, and then
so
you gotta
look at that thing.
Yeah, and then you roll your play on the VCR tape, and it tells you what you gained or if it was a fumble or whatever like that. And there was probably three or four games that did that VCR concept. So, you know, being football, I thought I'd bring that in.
Okay, so the idea being that you take a turn and you press play on the VCR and then the play happens and you're like...
So. Right, and it's supposedly, because it's NFL sanctioned, so it's real NFL plays from history.
It's like showing late 70s Raiders games.
Right. So then, and that's not every turn, I guess. There's a lot of like board play stuff, and then every once in a while the card will come up like hit play on the tape.
Oh, you know?
Like every turn is a play on the tape.
And they're like, uh-oh, bloopers!
Right.
And then it's just a bunch of bloopers. Right.
And nowadays, you know, obviously you got to hope that... the tape doesn't deteriorate now trying to play.
Who's got a VCR? That'd be the worst. You'd be like,
man. Yeah, well, you heard a couple weeks ago they made the last one. It was in the news. They made like the last VCR company in I don't know where, but they announced like the very last one was rolled off the line and that's it. So now you might see over the next 5-10 years, you know, VCRs go up a little bit. You might want to pack those away.
I count on you finding those at estate sales, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's always a ton of them there. I pass them up, but now, you know, I might think about putting a few of them away, especially if you can get it for a buck or two at some sales.
All right, what else you got there?
I brought the $6 million man board game. It's not a huge dollar amount, but it's, you know, it's a guy thing. You know, people will put them in their man caves or, you know, it's kind of a childhood
guy
thing.
What kind of man caves are you? I don't know if any person who has a man cave is like, would you like to play $6 billion
well,
man?
That's the whole thing is people don't play them. They just put them up for the graphic of the box.
Like,
that's
so like
what a lot of their stuff is.
James Bond bar.
Right. You know, they do that. And then the last thing was this really odd Bears clock with two full Miller Lite cans. I mean, it's heavy. Like, they're still full. And it was so odd. I never seen anything like it. I had to get it. And it still works.
That's so weird. Yeah. That clock, that's a Bears clock with two Miller Lite cans
on each side.
Full.
Yeah, Pete's got the
like
pictures.
They're glued around it, so the wood's glued around it, so you can't really pop the cap on them.
Right.
But they're full. There's beer in there.
You can tell. You shake it, you hear that little bit of air in there, you know. So that's kind of wild. But I just couldn't turn that up. That was about last summer, I think, I picked that thing up.
All right. We're getting somewhere. We got some good stuff on text coming in. 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? What do you want to brag about, Joan? Joan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joan.
Hi, thanks a lot.
No, thanks. So what do you got?
I have a 1979 White Sox ball signed by all the players in ink, including Francisco Berrio, Carlton Fisk, Wilbur Wood, Larry Doby.
Wow.
They all signed it. It's in mint condition. Everything is in the original, you know, handwritten ballpoint pen. And then I have a signed Stan Musial ball and bat with authenticity papers.
Wow, that's there great. You go. That's what you need, right?
Right. And as we talked in the past, usually sometimes like the Stan Musial with just one signature might be worth more than a whole team ball, you know, even though they're all, it's live ink, what they call live ink. And, you know, the single signature might be worth more.
Because let's face it, those players were terrible. Musial was right. great. The rest of the team, he was carrying them.
I'm questioning Wilbur Woods though, at 70, in 79 still pitching, but I guess it's possible. You know, those knuckleballers.
And I would also question, Joan, Carlton Fisk, I don't think he came to the White Sox till the 80s, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Right?
But because I'm not doubting her story with
this. It was in Boston.
Dated 1979. I was on the field when they signed it, and then I put the date on it.
Wow.
So all right, he was there.
Okay.
I don't know in what capacity, but he was definitely there.
So is it something you're going to keep, or you're looking to sell it, or a price?
I'm looking to get rid of it, yeah.
Yeah, that's I would go to one of the sports stores to start, or if you want to just look it up online, it's probably the fastest way if you're not familiar
with
it.
The Musial stuff that has the papers and the authenticity
stuff.
Yeah,
that's your best bet.
That's your best bet. That's going to actually get you probably hundreds of dollars. The
79
signed ball, without that, I'm not an expert. I'm 6 weeks into this. Greg has taught me a lot in a very little amount of time, but to me, I've heard over and over people call in with signed balls, and that's less of something that can fetch you a ton of money.
Yeah, the team stuff is usually a little bit less, unless obviously it's a
I didn't know that.
World
okay.
Series game. Yeah, but you can check it out, and there's exceptions to all the rules.
There you go. Thanks, Joan.
Can I jump in with Mantle, a signed ball with authenticity?
Oh yeah, well that's obviously something.
With Mickey Mantle?
With the authenticity.
Mantle, yeah.
You the lead with that?
I did not
save
lead
the best
with
for
that.
Last.
I'm sorry.
All right, well, that's good,
actually,
too.
I thought the team thing was more unique.
Yeah, sometimes it is. And
depends on the team,
more so
I guess.
Not.
If it's a world champion team,
right.
That'd be one thing. But if it's
Which
just
it
a,
wasn't. Yeah,
yeah I was going to
so
say.
What else are you holding out on us? What else you got?
Yeah.
I've got a Chris Chelios signed puck.
Okay, you should have quit while you were at that. No, I'm joking. That's another thing.
And
it's
I've got
single
a Nolan
person.
Ryan ball.
There you go.
Wow. Why do you have all these balls?
Pre or post
Robin Ventura? Joan, are you a collector? Why do you have all these signs?
No, buy them for my husband.
Oh, wow.
Well, there you go.
What
Very
is he?
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Joan.
What do I do? Do I put them online? What?
Have a family member. If you're not comfortable, check online. And if not, start at a sports store. They'll be able to point you in the direction.
Okay.
All right. There
all right.
You go.
Thanks,
Joan.
So much.
Thanks, Joan.
All right. So 312-981-7200. We'll come back. We'll take your calls, texts. Greg Flam's in studio at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. It's the Swap Meet. Stay with us. There's that music. It's the Swap Meet. Greg Flam is in studio. We are bragging about all our Chicago memorabilia. We just started with some baseballs. Good way to start.
Yep.
Seems like that's the time of the year. You get a lot of sports memorabilia. Tonight should be the night where we get a lot of people that are like, let me tell you what Bears stuff I have.
Yeah.
I was in Platteville. I was in a bar.
That's the standard sports stuff. We always get that, yeah.
I was in a bar, and Jay Hildenberg
right.
drank out of this mug, and I took his mug, and I've had it ever since.
There you go. Yep.
No? All right. Let's go to the text real quick. 312 said, this is a little bit earlier in the show, my pop was in World War II, came back with a very large Nazi flag,
yeah,
Nazi armband, and several Nazi officer uniform hats, yeah. Swords, too.
Yeah, high demand stuff. That is stuff that will create lines at estate sales.
Really?
From 4 a.m. or earlier, sometimes they'll be there for that stuff. World War II, especially the Nazi stuff that they brought back, just high demand. I can't even put a dollar amount on that, but that would be gone in the first 20 minutes of a sale.
Well, that's what he followed up, or she followed up with, looking to donate to a museum, but offered big money so far.
Yeah, everyone's got, if they feel better donating it, or if you get a lot of money, you could donate some of the money,
too. I mean, is it memorabilia collectors, or is it more nefarious where people are like, I love the Nazis, I pay a ton of money?
I think it's more just World War II, military collectors. They're more into that, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Hang on the wall and stuff and display it.
I would just think the authentic stuff, if you can somehow authenticate it, because that symbol has been used over and over and over.
Yeah,
and
but they know.
Over and over,
these people
they know.
They know the cloth, like the flags were printed on. They know the way the knives or swords were made. It's they know their stuff. I've run into them.
Let's Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, what do you got, Kathy?
Yes, yes.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Hi. I'm interested in, I have these two Beatle posters.
Okay.
And one goes back to February 1964 when they were going to be on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Okay.
And this is all autographed.
Wow.
And they're the cardboard posters. They're not just the paper.
Okay.
And then I have another one that's called the Silver Beatles with Pete Best.
Right, before, yeah.
Hearing it. Caravan, January 4th.
Okay, are these, Kathy, are these yours? Were you the one who got these?
Yeah, I found them at a resale shop for $5.
Wow. Are they more like, I don't know how to describe it, 14 inches high by, say, I don't know, 11 inches wide, or that size?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of the, I'm not saying it's common, but that would, like I said, I guess that, you know, that's how they made the posters back then. They even make reproductions of that, so that's something for the average person to keep an eye out, because you'll find that same poster, but it's a repro, and then it's not worth so much. But it sounds like if you got it back in that day, you've got something decent there.
She got it at a resale shop probably five
years ago. That's true, yeah. I definitely would have someone check that out then.
Where was it?
The one for the Ed Sullivan, that's all autographed.
Yeah, and chances are if it was a resale shop, they probably knew it was probably a reproduction.
Yeah, because it's only $5.
Yeah,
because
it's $5. Yeah. I mean, if it was real.
How do you find, where would I go to find out, you know, the...
That same resale shop.
They didn't know nothing.
They didn't know, but the problem, Kathy, is that if a resale shop is reselling it, and they're reselling it for $5, my guess is that maybe you could make the argument that they don't know what they're doing. That's what you hope for. But my guess is that they're like, we've seen these, we know these. These are repros, right. $5.
And
so that's the only thing. It's not like you found them in an estate sale in the basement of a guy named Harrison.
Right.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, the Beatle Fest, just rolled through a few weeks ago. It's too bad. Maybe if you're not in a hurry, you can bring it to the next one. It's a yearly event. Bring it there. They will definitely know. They'll know
feels
the signatures.
They do,
they'll know.
Beatles. They feel like they do Beatles things every 2 months.
Yeah.
This
throughout
is the
country.
Official
one.
Unofficial.
Yeah. There's usually two that roll through the town every year.
All right. Thanks.
I thought the one with Pete Best being at the caravan would be a unique because him being
right.
The first
you got that at the resale shop too.
Yeah.
And how much was that one? Or were they both five together?
Yeah.
Two for five.
That would be really bad if they knew.
Yeah.
I would look online. I would, you can maybe try maybe a higher end record store, more of a mom and pop specialty store and see what they say about it.
Well, I have them framed and I'm enjoying them, but I was
keep
curious
them.
As to, if they were worth anything, especially that they're not the paper, it's the cardboard, the old.
Right. And even at $5, it's still a good buy. You got something decent for $5.
Good old posters.
There you go.
Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. There we go. 312-981-7200. Beatles stuff is tough. I always feel like, especially we hear Beatles all the time.
Right.
And it feels like there's a whole cottage industry around posters with the Beatles because they obviously have produced, probably more than any musicians of all time.
You need the early stuff. Yeah. If you got anything after the breakup, pretty much, unless it's signed or something.
It has to be super scrutinized, too, right?
It does, because so much stuff was reproduced, and it was so mass-produced as well. I just happened to see an episode of Pawn Stars. Someone brought in the Beatles board game, and they thought they had, like, a $1,000 item, and they end up offering $40 for it. And it was in pretty good shape, but there's so many of
those.
That'd
be interesting, like a Beatles board game.
Yeah, I would want that.
708 says, I have an old 40s radio with all the Chicago punch button presets, WGN, WLS, WIND, WMAQ, all labeled.
Yeah, that's...
That's kind of
cool.
Did
what brand it was? Grundig or some other brand? But 40s, though, if it's a tabletop one, that could be $100 to $200. If it's the huge stand-up one, then you're, I don't know, because it's so big that people don't want to even deal with it. Hard to move around.
Okay. Let's go to Diane. Diane, what do you got, Diane?
Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'm going through things that my mom's had, and I have an original edition of actually two sets of the game Sorry. okay. with from Parker Brothers.
Right.
And I have the box that the original, all the pieces came in, like the...
The plastic?
Or... They're not plastic, they're wooden.
Okay.
I've got the directions.
Ooh,
I'm
listening.
I've got a full set of cards.
Okay, yeah. The first edition of any game is the one that people really want to collect.
Mm-hmm.
And if, like you said, it sounds like yours is near mint condition is what they call it. If the pieces aren't punched out from the wood or the cardboard or the, torn apart like in the plastic molds,
right?
That's called near mint condition.
Or doesn't smell like mildew like all my board games that are in the basement.
Right.
No, it looks like something I was thinking somebody might like to frame it. I mean, the board is still playable. It's all intact. Mm.
Sure, but if the... if the box is not torn, like the corners, you know, that's something easy to look up. I'm sure there's other ones online that you can compare yours to condition-wise and price-wise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go online and just and punch that in and see what pops up, because I'll bet on eBay alone you'll find close first edition sorry games.
Right.
And you'll be able to see what their condition
is. It's the same thing like with Monopoly. The first editions are worth more than later editions, even if they're in great condition.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Diane. All right. We got people waiting on the line, and we also got some great texts coming in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're doing Swap Meet. Greg Flam's in studio. We'll take a break, get an update. Rob Martier, we'll get back at it. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Swap Meet here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me, Greg Flam, DuPage Picker, at DuPage Picker on Twitter and Facebook. We are evaluating your Chicago junk and your memorabilia.
Yep. Sometimes it's both.
312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? There's a lot of good stuff to brag about. Let's go to Charlie. Charlie, what do you want to brag about, Charlie?
Hey, Charlie.
Hi, you guys doing? I touched in last week. I only got the Gallagher shirt.
Gallagher, nice.
It was signed. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Listen, I got a 1998 NBA Bulls championship T-shirt.
Okay.
And I've worn it every day, or not every day, but I've been wearing it for the past 19 years almost, it seems like.
So it means it's more like a brag, because you're not going to be able to put that on eBay and all the pit stains.
No.
That's my guess.
No, I mean... Yeah, everything's still intact on it, except a little threading, of course.
Are you the kind of guy who's wearing that every third day?
No, because I'm like...
Just during the season, right?
As soon as the Bulls become got Michael Jordan, everybody was a Bulls fan.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of almost impossible not to be a Bulls fan of what he did.
Oh, of course not.
If you had a 1988 Bulls shirt... I'd be like, that's worth something. 98, everybody's got a Bulls in 98. But an 88, when you're talking Reggie Theus or something like that?
That's right. Well, different coach, too.
Right. A Doug Collins signed T-shirt?
Yeah, he did. He couldn't quite get the job done.
He couldn't. Yeah. All right, Charlie, thanks for that Bulls shirt. I'll take that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, you guys take care.
Thanks.
You know, if you could get like a three-peat, like, you know, like they had that. But that seems like the kind of stuff that either you're going to keep – because you got it from Sports Authority or whatever it was at the time.
Yep.
What was it, like Sportmart?
Yep.
Or it's a shirt. The only time I ever see those worth anything is the shirt that they print up for the loser that's about to win, like a game seven.
You can get it before they ship it south.
Exactly. You see some kids in Africa, and you're like, oh, he's wearing a Carolina Panthers World Championship.
And oddly, those would be worth something if you can get them back here. But yeah. My brain cramp moment was when they first signed Jordan, like when the first few months he was signing at Yorktown Mall, and I just like walked by him like, it's like stupid. I should have, you know, got a picture or signed something, but who knew it back then?
All right, let's go to Tammy. Tammy, welcome to the show. What do you want to brag about, Tammy?
Hi, I have about 15 SNH stamp books that are filled.
Sure.
Plus I have extras. I found them when I moved my mom a couple years ago, and I held on to them because I didn't know if they were worth anything.
Yeah, they're not worth a lot. I brought some in about, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and they're a great conversation piece because people will talk about what they bought with the stamps. But as far as selling the stamps, even full books, I'm going to guess $10 to $20 a book maybe at that, if you're lucky. The catalogs seem to be worth a little bit more than the books, actually. So
what do I do with them? Is it worth it to even attempt it to get $20 for them? Or
yeah, I mean, have someone look it up. Maybe just sell them all as a lot, and maybe you can get more than 20 for your whole stack.
Sell them on eBay.
Yep. Yeah,
sell them on eBay? Okay.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, sure, you can look it up yourself, but they're on there. There's quite a few, so it's not that rare. But, again, it's like $10 to $20, maybe a little bit more if you have a stack. Or maybe look around for the catalog, too. Maybe that's laying around somewhere. You could put that with it and get a little bit more.
So you could sell them on eBay, or you can ask the guy who sells the carpets on the corner. You know, he's got the area rugs on the corner with the van.
Right.
He's got the area rugs of the Tiger or Tupac. Right. Ask if you can sit next to him and sell them there and see if you're done.
He's still warm enough to have a garage sale, too. I'm sure you can scrounge up enough stuff to have a sale.
All right. Thanks, Tammy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
So I'd go up to the guy and be like, hey, I love your carpets. Hey, listen, I've got some stuff, too. You think I can, you can give me a little plot of land here, a little corner?
Yep, hang out. I see him on Route 83, the wooden train guy selling wooden trains.
Hey, wooden train guy.
Right.
You mind if I sell some of these green stands here?
Yep.
Great, cool. I smell a promo video for a swap meet.
There you go. It'll be number one.
We'll just go to different people and try to negotiate. All right. Let's see what we got here. All right. I bought 847 says, I bought my late husband a board game called War of the Rings.
Okay.
Decades before Tolkien books became popular.
Hmm.
Is there any interest in this kind of thing?
I would think so, depending on the condition, of course. But yeah, and I would just look it up online. I'm not familiar with that one, though, as far as...
It sounds like a knockoff.
Right.
You know, like they're like, it sounds like a Disney knockoff.
And what you would hope is like maybe they changed the name after it and then she has like the first draft and that's maybe what you would hope, you know, she
Tolkien's
would have.
Like War of the Rings and then it doesn't really roll off the tongue. He's like,
what was Revenge of Jedi or
right.
Before they named
Revenge
it something
of the
else.
Jedi
yeah.
773 says, I have a signed 8x10 glossy of Johnny Unitas with authenticity papers.
Yep.
What do you think it's worth, and whom do I report or approach for a potential sale? Which really should be the name of Swap Me. We should just change it to,
Whom do
I approach for a potential sale?
There you go. It will match the music better. That's for sure. Yeah, I would just look online. I'm thinking $35 maybe. Mm. So...
Okay.
But it's got papers for it, so that's good.
Yeah, 312-981-7200. This is awesome. 847. I have a letter that was written to me from Roald Dahl in response to a letter I wrote to him when I was a kid. I was very involved at the library in my hometown, and they encouraged I'd write letters to our favorite authors.
Wow.
He actually wrote me back.
Wow.
And then, of course, is the letter worth anything?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a little too personal probably, but you could try.
Why would you want to sell that?
Right. If it's personal to you, yeah, something
that's
you want
awesome.
To keep.
You know what I would do? I would, every time anyone would walk past my
that's
house
right.
and be like, hey, you want some lemonade? I'll tell you this cool story about this Roald Dahl letter I got. Watch BFG? Did you see that movie?
Right. I would frame it. I mean, I framed my signed album from Goite. I sold him a keyboard and... He, you know, we kind of talked back and forth, and had I known who he was, I probably would have sold it.
The guy was like, somebody that I used to
And, you know, we talked, and he's really nice, and he sent some autographed albums, and I framed it with a little, you know, thing. So,
I mean. He's a good talker.
Yeah, it's a good conversation piece.
312 says, I sold half of my collection. I have approximately 60 G.I. Joes and sets left.
Wow.
All 60s, 70s, vintage, original sets are complete.
Yeah, he's got the gold mine.
I bought my last truck selling half of the collection. Wow.
Wow.
And he's got a picture of the stuff if you want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got gold there. That's the stuff, you know. You'll see it listed at estate sales, but it's usually gone, you know, in the first 5 minutes.
That's amazing. See? And so essentially just he just holds on to the other half of the collection until he needs something.
Right.
Because that's not going to get.
That's an investment, yeah.
That's not going to get any. Like, that's not going to depreciate.
No, especially 70s G.I. Joe, even the 77 Star Wars, like what was called Kenner years, those are worth, you know, quite a bit. And you can still find them, you know, these days, but not like what he has a complete set or anything like that. But you can still find the pieces or even sealed in a box, one or here or there.
312-981-7200. We'll get your texts and your phone calls. We'll wrap up Swap Meet after the break. Stay with us. Oh,
It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio, Greg Flamm. It's Swap Meet here on 720. Do it every Thursday night, 10 o'clock. 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? What do you have? What memorabilia do you have, the Chicago memorabilia, that you want to call up or text and brag about? We've had a lot of good stuff tonight. Let's go to Belinda. Belinda, what do you got that you want to brag about?
Hi. I have the 1985 Jim Beam Cub Spare decanter. It's like it's never been out of the box.
Wow.
It was not on display. It was kept in the box. The box is yellowed, but the seal's there, the liquor's still in it, and it's in
wow.
brand new condition.
Is it like,
and I want to know what it's worth.
Is it, is what's on the box? I mean, is it orange and, like, is it just the Bears logo?
No, no. It's the, if you go on to the Jim Beam decanters, it's in 1985, they made the cups bare. It's a bear.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's, yeah. Now I know.
Yeah. And it's never been, it's in mint condition other than the box
cubs.
Is yellow. It was not on display. It was kept in the box other than to take it out a couple times and look at it.
Yeah. I'm not
and
sure what.
That's it.
And drink.
Right. I'm not sure what the rules are selling, like, alcohol.
Oh, no,
on
I
eBay.
Know you can't do it with the alcohol, but the decanter's in mint condition.
Right, yeah, but
the
it is, you definitely have something worthwhile there. I just don't know, like, selling it online. You probably have to sell that through Craigslist or, you know, maybe a garage
or
sale.
Or maybe
but,
on the corner, yeah.
Yeah, you have to
well, a garage
do the same
sale,
thing.
I don't know if I'd want to do that.
Yeah, you won't get
I would
enough,
think
enough at the...
I doing so well. They
yeah, right.
Right.
Might want that.
Yeah, you could also okay. do maybe pickup only, you know, on eBay. They might let you do it that way because I just don't think you could mail that. Mm.
All right, thanks,
Belinda.
No, I
would take the liquor out of it, but yeah. thank you.
Oh, I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Leave it in.
Oh, okay.
Leave it sealed. Right. Do not unseal that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Mike. Mike. Mike, what do you want to brag about, Mike?
Oh, hi. Sorry.
Hi, Mike.
I've got a – how are you? I've got a signed – Ernie Banks jersey, okay. although it's not game worn,
right?
But it's signed. It's got a certificate of authenticity, and it's in a plexiglass case. It's a new jersey.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously, with you know, Cubs doing so well right now, that might you know get a little bit more now. If you're looking to sell, now is the good time. It's in a frame, so obviously for shipping, it's going to be a little bit. You can't. It's not like you can fold it up and ship it, so you're going to have to do
right.
Cost a little bit more to ship.
I mean, I could take it out. I mean, that's not a it's not an issue of taking it out.
Sure. Yeah, but yeah, I think it's I'd say 100 maybe 150. You know, you
okay.
start there and do an auction and see if it goes up from there.
I think the bank yeah. stuff. I'd hold on to it just because I think as you get a little bit
yeah.
closer or a little bit longer in the tooth.
Yeah,
away from
I actually
Ernie Banks
bought it
dying,
at a,
that you might, yeah.
Yeah, I bought it at a school auction, and I've had it for probably 15 years
yeah.
now. So
right.
I'd wait a couple more years.
Yeah, I think it won't go
okay.
down, that's for sure.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, cool, thanks. Bye.
Greg.
Hey,
what do you want to brag
you?
About? I'm looking at this. What do you have?
I was cleaning out my mom's basement, and I found a sack filled, at least a 20, 25-pound sack filled with silver dollars and other silver coins.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
it's good for working out. You get 20... It's almost right. 20, keep lifting the 20-pound bags of silver dollars.
Right. And obviously, you know, if they're pre... What was it? 1970 or in the 50s, they use more silver than they do later years. So that determines the silver amount. You could take those. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of coins to... You know, you might want to take a little bit at a time to a, you know, coin shop, and they'll give you, you know, fair value for the silver content at least.
Interesting.
Okay,
if you're
right.
looking to sell it. If not, you could take the time and go through each one and see if, the, as a coin, if they're worth more than the silver. Sometimes that's the case, but not always.
There you go.
Is there a better website or anything to check it out on than others?
You could do eBay, and I think there are other coin websites that you can look into. I'm sure someone will text us with that information. But I know there's a dozen coin websites. I would just punch in, like, pick out one coin and look it up just on Google and see where it takes you from there.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Thanks,
Greg. Thanks. Good luck.
First game of the NFL season looks to be done. The Denver Broncos hold on. Denver Broncos hold on a missed field goal at the end of the game. The Carolina Panthers – And Cam Newton showed some resolve there.
Yep, they worked hard.
They just keep getting their butt kicked, and they got into field goal range, and the kicker missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Classic, the NFL is back. All right, 708, Mike from Crestwood. I have a Mitchell transistor radio made in Chicago, 1954, original box.
Yeah, not familiar with that specific one, but solid state, 1951.
54,
misrepresent. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one, but I just say look it up and see if he wants to sell it, see what it's going for. I'm sure they're online.
708 says they have Subway bullhorns.
Every week I think we get
Subway
the bull
bulls horns. Yeah. Oh, bulls like
yeah,
the
like
bulls.
It's a hat with the bull horns on it. Yeah, I think we've gotten that one two or
like,
three times. Or, right,
like you go on the Subway and you just go.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's a popular item.
312. I do have a John Bunny doll from 1905. Hmm. He was a silent movie actor, and I can't recall the manufacturer offhand. It's not mint. I don't have a photo. Any ideas on what it's worth?
Yeah, just have to look that one up.
John Bunny.
It tends to be a generational thing too. Like that, it's so old that it's kind of falling out of what's popular now with the generation that are collecting now. But it's definitely worth looking.
Someone probably has an interest in John Bunny dolls.
Sure.
There's someone said a map. It looks like an 1804 Villages of Chicago Indian Trails map that is framed in a wooden frame. It's just an old map. What are old maps going for?
People love maps just because they make great decor. You frame them. People do the, they'll take an old door and just, decorate it with maps, use it as a coffee table. So maps, especially even newer, like 1980s, like theme park, amusement park maps, are in high demand. So I'd say I'd start an auction at like $50 for that one and go up from there. I'm sure it's probably worth a little bit more than that. So make sure you start it as an auction. Don't buy it now so you don't short yourself.
All right. 312-981-7200. It's interesting because someone just texted in like, you should name the name of this segment. It should not be Swap Meet. It should be Google It.
Right. Google, look it up. Then come back to us.
Well, there's something I don't get frustrated. I get a lot of text in that obviously they see this as utility where they're like, tell me how I'm going to make money off of this.
Right.
And I think that you would be wise to figure that out on your own than maybe taking advice from the radio show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, cause obviously no one's going to know everything or every item. So, you have to kind of look it up and, if it helps, obviously some people can text in a picture that it really helps.
But see, that's what I really like about 847 to the Rawl doll. Mm-hmm. That was the winner for me because that's a letter that was sent to, this person as a kid.
Right.
And yeah, this is probably not worth anything. It's personal, but at the end of the day, it's pretty cool that author who
right.
was a pretty big deal, sent you a personalized letter. That's cool. That's what I
want.
Well,
like you said,
segment.
That should be hanging in his front door. You open the door, and that's one of the first things
right?
you see in his hallway is what I would do with that.
That's right. That's what I like about this. So another great episode of the Swap Meet. We'll be back next Thursday. We'll have to figure out. I got to figure out timing-wise because coming up here in October, we got Blackhawks, which are
right.
coming back.
Football.
We also have Chicago Cubs playoff baseball.
Of course.
Which we'll be doing a lot. We'll be bringing specials and talking about the games, things like that. So once we have those schedules kind of worked out, we will work it out. Greg Flamm, Swap Meet, here every Thursday night at 10 o'clock, pretty much giving everybody in Chicago and the Chicagoland area something to brag about, right?
Greg, I liked your other slogan. You can't take it with you. Your slogan? You do it.
You can't take it with you.
You can't take it with you when you die, but you can take it with you until you die. That was awesome.
Can't take it with you when you die, but you can take it with until you die.
Right.
That's good.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin.
That's going to do it tonight for the download. Patty Vasquez, Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, coming up next here on 720 WGN. Tomorrow night, the week in review. We will look back at the week that was.
Nice.
Rob, you see Trevor Siemian's 1-0 in the NFL?
I'm telling you, man, I knew it all along. There was not a doubt in my mind that Trevor Siemian wouldn't be able to lead the Broncos to their first win.